Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. We have an investigation happening in Buffalo. Apparently, before this tragic incident occurred at the grocery store, advance warning was given to several people, one of which was a retired federal agent. So now it is being reported by the Buffalo News that there is an active investigation into whether or not this individual should be charged as an accomplice. Of course, this story is going around because a lot of people are looking into, let's just call it, nefarious and malicious means behind the scenes involving federal agents with these tragic incidents that have occurred. I don't believe, you know, I don't blindly just believe the theories that people are putting out, the conspiracies. But I do think they're it's interesting to talk about because some people seem to think there may be more going on. And I think the information we get out of these warrants an investigation. So guess what? They're investigating this guy. Now, typically when people investigate themselves, they don't find anything wrong. So who knows? But there are a lot of other questions about what happened with the Uvalde shooting, like how this poor kid, a couple days after his 18th birthday, was able to get a credit line or able to get money to buy an extremely expensive rifle, get it delivered and pick it up all in the span of less than 2 days. Some people just, they want to know. There needs to be an investigation here. But we have more information coming out, and I'm shocked to say, for the first time in a long time, the left and the right are united. Mm. They're united in their disdain for the police, who stood in the hallway as they heard the shots going off and did nothing. And outside barred parents from getting in, armed parents from saving their kids. So it's remarkable to see left-wing activists just as outraged and for the same reasons as the right is. So, hey, who'd have thought this would be the thing that would unify us? But when kids lose their lives and police do nothing and bar people from saving them, I think you're going to get a lot of people are going to be angry. So we're going to talk all about this and a bunch of other stuff. Joining us to discuss this is Brian Dean Wright.
Good, sir. Pleasure.
Who are you?
Yes, I am here to enjoy you all. But beyond it being here, I host a podcast called The President's Daily Brief. We talk about a lot of international affairs, some domestic stuff. But the focus is just like the actual President's Daily Brief, which is a top secret summary that's given to the president every morning. I do the same thing with folks of what's happening around the world. And we focus a lot on why you should care, because lots of things around the world happen. But really, why would I care if I'm in Des Moines this morning, right? So we talk about that, and we talk about solutions. So how do we solve the country's problems, the world's problems? So that's what I do every morning at 6 a.m. And having worked at the CIA, that's the reason I started doing this PDB podcast.
So you're former deep state.
Yes. Yeah, well, maybe current.
You don't know. Can you ever shake it?
Oh, let's talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
All right. But you did work at the CIA.
I did.
We'll definitely talk about that in the deep state or whatever else. We have Daniel Turner as well.
Yeah, and if there's a Fed to my right, my name is Jack Posobiec. I am, yes, Daniel Turner, Power of the Future. Great to be here again. Always good to be with you. And I was talking to Brian in the green room. I've followed him for years and years, and so it's actually really cool to meet you in person. So I'm glad to be here.
Ian Crossan, what's up, everybody? I'm going to do something a little controversial and spin the UFO with my fingers.
Oh no!
Look at that! Look at that wobbly spin!
Oh.
I didn't say I was going to spin it fast.
Nice.
Just said I was going to spin it.
Love it.
And I followed through.
The chat has exploded. Everyone's saying Fed.
Oh yeah, we talk about like a road to redemption. So is there something like that when you're no longer a Fed, or how long until you're
right.
no longer?
Well, you guys tell me, what's the penance? Like what's the thing that I have to do to make myself redeemed?
And you're talking
$100 right? Just right now, actually.
Done it.
Yeah,
your soul will be saved.
I'm in.
I know that's...
Nice.
What about you, Lydia?
I am also here in the corner, and I'm about to troubleshoot a little audio buzz we seem to be having. I think I know what it is, so hopefully I can fix it, but until then, I'll throw it to Tim.
Before we get started, my friends, head over to timcast.com, become a member to help support our work. As a member, you'll get access to exclusive members-only segments from this show Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. You'll also be supporting all of our journalists. We're probably going to be hiring a bunch more. Yo, it's just really hard to hire journalists right now. Because all the good ones have jobs already because they're good. And they get paid well for it. I suppose if you look to the corporate press, you're going to not want to hire those people. So, you know, the pool isn't that big. But we're working on it. And you will also be supporting our infrastructure. We use Rumble Cloud Services, of course, because we are actively doing everything we can to separate from the establishment big tech machine, which also means, thanks to our amazing engineer and Andy, our CTO, if you go to the homepage of timcast.com, these streams are now there with the chat and everything.
So cool.
So if you're logged into YouTube on the same browser, you can actually watch on timcast.com. It all just takes time. We're working on it, but with your support, we will get that job done, and we've got some more announcements coming soon. And I also just want to point out, so we're going to be doing culture jamming as marketing, and right now there is a 70-foot picture of my face on top of the ABC News building.
Ooh.
I was talking to – so we got a billboard in Times Square right on top of the Good Morning America building, and I was talking to Carl Benjamin of the Lotus Eaters podcast. He was like, congratulations, man, but you know, how do you track the impact of that? And I was like, you don't, but that's not why I got it. I got it so that there'd be a 70-foot picture of my face on top of the ABC News building. So every time these people are coming to and from work, they can see that I am above them. I don't know if they'll actually care about that, but it's a statement about us starting to move into these culturally establishment spaces. And, you know, Kash Patel was talking about how they did something similar. The Daily Wire did something similar. So I don't know if Times Square is really about good marketing. So we're actually planning good marketing. But we've got – it's a little vanilla, but we do have some pretty good culture jamming as marketing events planned for the next few months. And we're talking some of the greatest trolls on the planet. And with your support, we are going to generate some press. So don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe to this channel right now, share the show with your friends. It is a lovely Friday night. Let's read this first story from the Buffalo News. Authorities investigating if retired federal agent knew of Buffalo mass shooting plans in advance. They're actually wondering if this dude should be charged as an accomplice. What they're basically saying is that in this I think it was in the Discord that The perpetrator shared the information with six individuals, one of which was a retired federal agent.
Hmm.
They say agents from the FBI are in the process of tracking down and interviewing the six people, including the retired agent, and attempting to determine if any of them should be charged as accomplices, the two sources with close knowledge of the probe told the Buffalo News. The two sources did not identify the agent by name and could not confirm what agency he worked for. I just got to start off by saying, sometimes there are racist former federal agents. Sometimes people who are criminals work for different departments. Or maybe this guy was in a Discord and did not see any of this information, and that's why he didn't report it. We don't know. But the reason I want to lead with this is because there's a lot of questions around all of these. It's becoming particularly prominent to see on Twitter and other platforms where people are questioning how these things can actually happen. Like, how is it, you know, with Uvalde, a guy 2 days after his 18th birthday, gets one of the best, most expensive rifles possible? What was his training? How could he have afforded it? He was being made fun of for being, poor. Now all of a sudden, you know, so people question this stuff. I think there are simple solutions, simple answers to a lot of these things, but I do think we could not debunk that truly and honestly. We can cast doubt onto these theories. But I think it's interesting. So I don't know. What do you guys think about this? The potential federal agent. I should ask you, Brian, as you are a former... Fed. Former Fed, maybe current.
Did you just say current Fed? Yeah, got it. All right. Yeah, look, there are bad apples in every bunch, aren't there? And whether this guy was knowledgeable and actually ignored his own training, which is these folks, especially Bureau guys, they know absolutely the signs, the flags, and when and where to report those. So he should have a very special sensitive tripwire is the point. And the fact that he didn't do what he should have is really odd and frankly disconcerting because it doesn't make sense.
Interesting. Some people were – so I can't confirm a lot of what people are posting in these stories, but some people are saying that apparently these guys might have been in Uvalde and in Buffalo in the same discords, or that the people egging them on may have been in the same discords.
Mm.
I don't know. If you go back all the way to Columbine and you look at the investigation into that, even Dylan Klebold, I think his name was, I forget. Thank you. But even his family said, you know, he spent a lot of time in the garage. We always heard these loud noises. He was always blowing things up. This is kind of similar in the sense that there are a lot of warning signs, right? Like, clearly he's telling people, just like the guy in Texas, you know, told people. He told that girl who he tagged on social media in L.A., like, I'm going to do this. I mean, if that isn't a sign that there is some clear mental problem, that there's this very blatant cry for help, there's almost the desire to attract attention before the fact.
And I think right now the conversation, as it should be, is, you know, what else can we do? But I think what we're starting to see now is, well, actually, there really isn't a need necessarily for more laws or more sort of bureaucratic steps. It's just actually to execute what the things that we were supposed to do more thoughtfully, more consistently, whether it's at the schools, you know, making sure doors are shut for Pete's sake. If you're a parent or you're a loved one or you're a neighbor and you start seeing this stuff, raise the flag. Do the things that we all know that work, right? So I don't know in this case, as we learn more, that we really should have an additional layer of laws or whatnot. It's really just making sure that what we do and, you know, have on the books, just execute that more thoughtfully, more consistently.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you that this issue of training, that's one that I think is really odd on this with this fellow, because he was so young. There is no, he just got this gun. It's not a light weapon to work with. So some degree of training, exposure, where did he get that? That's one of the things that I have been looking at and looking for.
When people are pointing out this gun with taxes and shipping and everything was $2,000, you know, a lot of people said, how could a guy who works at Wendy's and is under 18 afford that? Because you'd have to, save up for how long? I mean, I suppose if he's living with his mom, he's not paying anything. But then apparently he got into a fight with his grandma or something over a phone bill. So maybe he really just saved up this money. And then it could be quite simple, a credit card. You turn 18, you get a credit card. If you've got no bad credit, you might get a couple grand on a credit card.
Yeah,
easily. But then it's the time frame. So I'm not sure if this is correct. I don't know if you guys know. You guys can fact check me. But it was 2 days after his 18th birthday. So he ordered the gun online, and then maybe a week in advance it got shipped in. Then he went there and picked it up, and then the next day maybe. I mean, it's all possible. I don't want to say it's not. I don't want to say it's impossible, but it is kind of like, did he really plan it out meticulously as he did? I suppose, right?
That sounds like he'd been planning it for a while. If he organized it so that the gun had arrived after he turned 18 and everything was right then, it sounded like he'd been planning it.
Well, let me add, so this issue of planning. So in the intelligence community, particularly with terror attacks, we know that there is a planning process. And along that process, you end up finding ways to intervene. They slip up. They make mistakes. There are little warning signs. And from an intel perspective, that's what you look for to stop those attacks. So I think, again, we're going to see the more the investigative work that gets done, there are those little pops and flags that we're going to see retroactively be like, we should have seen that. Or somebody did see that and they didn't do something. And I think that's where we're going to start really making a difference. When we these horrible events happen, we learn from them. That's how we stop the next one. It's going to change. The next attack's going to change, but that's what we learn.
Yeah, basically what you were just saying before, to add on to that, when I look at these incidents, I think one of the problems we have is that we think there's a solution. And maybe there is. I'm not saying we shouldn't try and figure something out. But I wonder if when, you know, people are saying, we need armed teachers. And I'm like, well, you know, I think if people were armed in general, we'd probably be better off. But I don't know if that solves the problem of a deranged young person who plans this thing out. If this dude really did plan it out as extensively as he did, and seemingly he did because he ordered it in advance, waited until his 18th birthday, saved up money or got a credit card, who knows what he did, but he planned it, then I don't think, I'll put it this way, you mentioned something before the show. You said we got to be right 100 out of 100 times, because that one time you aren't is when they get you. So we can plan, we can be like, okay, how about armed teachers? And then the kid just, the next person makes a plan to accommodate for armed teachers. Mm-hmm. I think the issue is that we've got a cultural and mental illness problem. I think that, you know, I know a lot of conservatives say mental illness problem, but you look at the medication these kids are on, and we have a fatherlessness problem. It's cultural, and it's multifaceted.
Amen.
Everybody just wants the singular solution. They're like, we can either ban the guns or, you know, we can arm the teachers. And I'm like, that's not going to solve what's going on.
Well, I think, and when it comes to the government stepping in, you know, this kid is cutting himself. Right, he's made a lot of threats. where's Child Protective Services? And all I'm going to say is I don't even have – it's not even a question. It's more just an observation. But Child Protective Services were showing up to people's parent – to parents' house where they refused to vaccinate their kids within hours, right? In the height of the pandemic of COVID, Child Protective Services was stepping in swiftly. So it's just kind of bizarre that the same government services that we are looking to protect children in the case that the parents are not doing their job seem to be kind of absent when this is a very clear case of a kid who is troubled, who is abusive, who is, I mean, if you're 17 and you're cutting yourself, you're cutting your face repeatedly, there, I mean, how much more of a red flag law do we need to say this kid is not? But boy, if he had said, my parents won't get me vaccinated, holy crap, the Child Protective Services would have been there within minutes.
What if he says, my parents won't let me get my Adderall prescription filled? Will Child Protective Services come and take him? Will they side with him because he needs his Adderall? Or will they side with the parent because it's unconscionable to give a 14-year-old Adderall?
My parents won't let me choose my pronoun.
Yeah,
my holy gender. Holy cow, would they have swept in and said, the abuse you're creating to this child. So the reason why I'm bringing this up is not to dump on people who are failing at their job, but if you're turning to the government for a solution, I don't think you're going to have any solution that works.
Not in this case. It's like state of mind. The government is not good at solving state of mind. You need like a spiritual leader or something, or something like that.
I think we are in a culture war for a reason. We have very serious cultural problems. Now, it's cool to see that the left and the right are unified in their disdain for the police over this one, but when you look at how the left has been approaching basically everything, I can say it feels to me the reason moderates and conservatives are kind of united. You've got post-liberal, libertarian, centrists, and conservatives all in sort of an agreement because they're actually addressing facts and issues. The left isn't. You know, when it comes to issues of these shootings, they say background checks. I said yesterday, okay, we have those. Oh, ban the AR-15. Okay, what about an AK? What about an M1A? What about any other gun? I mean, so many. They're just not saying anything. But they're getting really, really mad. You know, so I look at the deep cultural issues, and I'm sorry if I'm not going to take a liberal's word for it, because they believe Jesse Smollett. And now we have this tweet going viral from another fake account claiming that Governor Abbott sent a rep to this guy's house telling him that if, you know, we'll pay you to stand with the governor, and if you don't, we'll criminally charge you or something. It's the most ridiculous made-up fake story, probably by a 12-year-old. Joaquin Castro is tweeting, let me know if you need any help. Pulitzer-winning journalists are all tweeting it out, like, I can't believe this is happening. Christopher Titus, the comedian, verified. He's like, Abbott is done. It's like, dude, boomers. I mean, I want to say boomer, but they're not boomers. They're like 35 years old.
And Twitter hasn't taken it down. Twitter hasn't flagged it as misinformation or false.
But forgive me if I say the people who believe Jesse Smollett, I'm not going to take political advice from. It's just never going to happen.
Yeah. Maybe a lack of critical thinking, because I think they're still getting facts that's just not right. They're wrong facts, whatever that means.
Well, then they're not facts.
Yeah, like that the AR means assault rifle, for instance. And then they think ban AR, you're not going to have any more assault rifles.
So even if you look at this, I think, from the most hopeful perspective, people need control. And when you have a moment like this, everything feels out of control. So you're going to gravitate to the thing that makes you feel best and most comfortable. And it's AR-15. Okay, that's the bad thing that we all need to focus our energy on. Doesn't matter the nuance or the facts. It's just enough people in the moment of hysteria say, that's the bad thing. There's the one silver bullet solution. Focus on it. And that's just not true. You're bringing up the very correct points. This is multifaceted. Maybe we have a medicine issue or the mental health concern. We have a lack of a father. We have a lack of support in the family. There are so many different pieces to each of these kinds of horrific shootings that to stop and really ask tough questions, not happening. We just want the one silver bullet solution.
I want to pull up this tweet from Matt Walsh. Matt Walsh says, absolutely damning. There is no defending this. 19 officers waited outside and listened to children get slaughtered. I hope all of these cowards are sued into bankruptcy. They deserve prison, too, but I doubt that's going to happen. Let me read for you this excerpt that Matt posted. The authorities now say that local officers first entered the school at 11:35, 2 minutes after the gunman, and that there were 19 officers in the hallway by 12:03 p.m., but that they did not breach the door and kill the gunman until 12:50, even as they continued to hear him firing. I just want to pause. And perhaps tug at your heartstrings, maybe a little bit. I want you to imagine being in the hallway, hearing 10-year-old children being shot, from a high-powered rifle and with 19 people around you armed, and I want you to imagine what must possibly be going through your head to think, I'm not going to do anything. I can't fathom that. This wrecked me when I read this tweet. It's wrecking me now.
I'm wondering what they knew, the cops. Did they think there were multiple shooters? Was it possible there were multiple shooters that they were firing on purpose in there to draw them in to kill the cops? Like, what did they know?
I think what was the first thing they said, but they could have got shot. Yeah. Is that what it was?
Look, I'll tell you from my view, having worked with law enforcement and the intelligence community, when you're going face to face with really awful, evil people, you just go. And you get into this line of work because you know that you're there because other people can't be or won't be. And so you take that mantle on, and you know that you're going to throw yourself into harm's way. And the people who love you, your spouses, your kids, they know that that's the agreement that you have. It's just in your heart. And so, you know, the extent to which this did or didn't happen, I don't know. But I'll tell you, if you had a bunch of guys in a hallway who knew that this slaughter was happening and they put aside their oath and their commitment to those kids or their community because they were afraid for their own lives, while at some level I think most of it can understand, like, hey, we want to preserve ourselves. Mm-hmm. When you sign up to be a law enforcement official or even an intelligence officer, you understand that your body at some level belongs to the mission. And you go. You go in and you know that you will sacrifice yourself. That's just what you sign up for.
It sounds very logical. I don't know that I would be affected in that way. I think the moment I heard screaming and the guns, I'd just be kicking the door in.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd be able to think straight.
But that's the point. Most people that I've ever worked with in law enforcement, they come to the table with that orientation in their heart. That's just what they do because they know that they're going to be called on to do that. It doesn't matter who your kids are or your spouses or whatever. When you hear that moment, when you see that person needs to be taken down, you go. And you know that you can put yourself in harm's way.
Real quick, sorry, man. Have you ever watched a movie where there's like medieval warfare or ancient warfare or even colonial era warfare? And I always thought
every Mel Gibson movie ever made.
Every Mel Gibson movie, all of them. The Patriot is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I, when I watch these movies, I always see those guys on the front line with the spears or whatever, and I'm like, they know they're going to die. Hmm. And they stand there knowing they are going to die. And it's remarkable because that's something you choose to walk up to, stand there and say, this is it.
Yeah.
When in this circumstance, I'm just like, this is the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
These are the people who are like, I'm not going in front. And they can hear children being shot. I can't understand. I have run into danger for stupider reasons than that. When I worked for these media companies, and we hear the gunshots and we hear the flashbangs go off, and we take cover and we slowly try going towards it just to film it. Just to film, because we want to show people what's happening. Hmm. Let alone trying to save the life of a child. I my brain doesn't understand this. I just don't get it. I just can't.
It doesn't. The brain doesn't process it, because even if it weren't the gunshots, if they just said on the other side of this door are some children who were shot, you can't fathom standing there for 30 minutes and saying, oh yeah, there were kids shot on the other side of this door. Like, they knew there were people who had been shot. You are looking for triage. You're looking to, so it doesn't make sense. And I'm not saying it didn't happen. It defies logic. Yeah. It defies emotion. It defies human nature. It defies the nature of law enforcement, which does have that race in and save the day.
Right.
It doesn't compute.
Look, you've got left and right publications are essentially unified on this. CNN's reporting they waited in the hallway 19 people. That's just,
That doesn't make any sense.
I'll tell you, working with a lot of guys in the military, they have told me stories, and no doubt people who are listening and watching right now probably know what I'm about to say, in terms of when you've got your brothers next to you, and if there's somebody coming at you, you get up and you fire. You take care of the threat. You do it for yourself. You do it for the people who are around you. There's a brotherhood and a sisterhood that you're in this for the mission. But it's also because you're doing this for your country. You know, in this way, you know, you're doing it for your community. You're doing it for those kids and those families, but you're doing it for your community because you love your community. You want to defend it from any threat, foreign or domestic. It's the exact same thing in the military. You know, those guys do it for their country because they love their country. So I don't know what in the heck has gone on here, but something is very, very wrong.
I got ratioed today on Twitter because I said, this is what happens when you defund the police, you get incompetent officers. Mm. And the response from the right was these were fully funded officers and they have no obligation to defend anybody. And the left said the same thing. This department was never defunded. And so I'm going to eat that one and I'm going to own up to the poor wording of the idea. What I was thinking of when I was tweeting that was, this is what happens after quote unquote defund the police.
Yeah.
Not, I didn't mean to say that this department was specifically defunded. I said, when you demonize police, when you memorialize criminals, this is what you'll get. Why would an officer, they're thinking to themselves, if I go in there, they're going to blame me. They're going to say, oh, he started shooting because you did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They will throw. So no one is willing to take the actions anymore.
Yeah. I was imagining that it, from their perspective, maybe in like fog of war, they didn't know what was going on. If there were multiple shooters, if it was a hostage situation, if ever there were three guys in there with AR-15s trained on the door, ready for cops just to walk through one by one and take them down one by one. And they're like, we're not going to add to the bloodshed. That's what I'm trying to figure. Someone had mentioned that cops do not rush towards an armed man that they can't see because they will get shot. What were we going to say, Brian?
No, this idea, though, building on what you both have just said, this idea of risk aversion, right? So if you right now are in the law enforcement capacity in this country, you know that if you step incorrectly, you are going to be under a massive microscope, irrespective of your intent. So could there have been an issue here where some of those people, particularly collectively, are like, oh, God, if we do the wrong thing here, or the cameras are going to be outside, and we're all going to get nailed for this. To what extent is there a risk aversion sort of culture developing within law enforcement because of this sort of the woke stuff, or even some degree of actually, you know, good scrutiny over what people in law enforcement, you know, have done historically? But has it gone too far? Has a pendulum swung too far? I think that could also potentially be something that we're looking at here.
Well, the last two Democrat presidents, one being the current and the one before Trump, you know, the day this happened or 2 days ago, they were talking about George Floyd and talking about the need for police accountability. So when you say, have we taken it too far? Yeah. Who wants to be a cop right now? You know, and this just makes it worse, right? Now everyone's like, you're going to be a cop. Did you know 19 of them stood in the hallway? And now you have to be collectively joined to that, you're all cops. It's like, I don't want to be part of that type of cop, but I want to be a cop, but not anymore, I don't. If this is what it means, if every time I do something, you're going to subpoena my body cam footage to have NBC edit it in a way that makes me look like the best. Screw you. I don't need this for $38,000 a year.
And we desperately need heroes right now.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, if in the military, if those soldiers didn't have the authority to mow down civilians at will in the heat of the moment, we would lose every war.
Yeah.
You need that vicious onslaught. You need it. Or you cannot win a war. That's war.
And
these people, it basically was a similar, it was like a war moment of war in the classroom.
But I think this is different. But I see what you're saying. You know, you need a certain level of vigor and you know, when it comes to outright war.
Mm.
But when you're in war, it's different from when you're hearing children dying right next to you. Yeah. I have no words to explain. Like,
the correlation is that their authority to be brutal has been stripped away from them. I'm not saying that it's good for cops to be brutal, but I think that in some cases they need to feel like they can be in order to survive.
Now, I would only offer, brother, that I think that there is a good thing that we teach both in law enforcement, the intel community, and military, and that is target discernment. So understanding who's in front of you and whether or not to pull the trigger. And I think that a certain bridling of that raw human nature that just wants to throttle and kill, it's not such a bad thing, actually. It's quite good. So some discernment around target selection is brilliant. But your point, and this is really important, in that fog of war, in that intensity, when your adrenaline is pumping, are you going to make that perfect decision 100 times out of 100 times, right? And we know that, whether it be in intel, law enforcement, or military, you're going to make mistakes, and mistakes are going to happen. And so that's when I think as a country, we need to be able to have that moment of reflection to say, someone made a mistake. It doesn't mean all law enforcement are good or bad. Let's be careful with our statements, not to make sweeping generalizations, but maybe a bit more nuanced. But the bottom line, I think that a little bit of target discernment is really important. It's really good. But I think in this case, something just didn't go well. Didn't go right.
It's worse than you all realize.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about police who stood back and did nothing. From TimCast.com. Border patrol team who ultimately killed the shooter were blocked from entering the school by Uvalde police for nearly an hour.
Why?
That doesn't make any sense.
These people were, not only were they cowards, but they were obstructing the parents and the border patrol. This is something is wrong here.
Something's really screwed
up. Something is seriously wrong here.
Yeah.
Now, they're saying they thought the children were at risk, and so they didn't want to risk it by storming in or something like that. And now they're saying it was a big mistake. I don't buy it. For you to stand outside that room hearing gunshots, knowing there are children inside.
Even if you don't hear gunshots, if you know children had been shot an hour ago,
right.
Still can't go in. There are kids who were shot inside, can't go in.
What do they think was going to happen? Like, he after he killed all the kids, he wasn't a threat anymore? He's still got a gun. Look, let him run out of bullets first. That's crazy. Apparently he had, like 1,600 rounds? We need, right now, for our future generations, heroes to look up to. You know what we need? We need a story about one of these cops, what should have happened, storming in, kicking the door in, pulling out their service weapon, and ending this psychopath, and then telling people about how he risked everything to save these kids, and that's what you want to be when you grow up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the Border Patrol agent who actually did eventually kill him, right, was getting his hair cut. His wife his wife texted him and said, "There's an active shooter in the school.
Really?
Help!" And I'm sure you can find that article. And he was in the barber shop. He didn't have his weapon on him, but his barber had a shotgun.
Holy cow!
The barber's shotgun and drove to the school.
That's
and
amazing.
He is the one.
That's and the story.
You can find the story.
Yeah,
that dude needs a movie.
That and he's the one who eventually killed the shooter.
But wow.
I'm sure you can find the article.
Yeah. Let me pull that up.
That is the culture.
That's
having
what we
been
want.
In this world for a while. That is absolutely in the DNA. Of every cop and every military official and every CIA officer that I've worked with, I would say in the vast majority of cases, that's what drives people to show up, is doing exactly what he did. Off duty, wasn't his responsibility, doesn't matter. It was still his mission because it was his community. It was his country.
That's what people dream of when they join the forces. Yes. Good people dream
that's
of
right.
having that moment when they can jump up, grab the nearest available weapon and make it happen. Well, I wanted to say before we move to this really interesting sounding story, I think that this might be the result of what happened during the pandemic. When they were locking down, they were enforcing all these unconstitutional rules, and the good cops were like, I'm out. Bye. So we're left with cowardly cops who watched what happened during the BLM riots.
I don't know if he was the guy who actually killed the shooter. They say it was a CBP BORTEC. Is it BORTEC group?
Border Tactical?
Yeah, that confronted him. But this guy did run in with his barber's shotgun.
Oh, he saved his wife and daughter. Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He took his barber's shotgun.
Still, an amazing story.
Yeah.
These are the guys.
Those are the ones that we need to make hero movies about.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, how would you do it? It would be short.
Short
it's
and
like,
sweet.
It's just a dad who said, I've got to save my family, you know?
Yeah.
You know, again, what I would love to know is about this man's life. What drove him in his life to become who he became? What, in his childhood, in his young adulthood, what made him decide that in that moment, sitting in that barber chair, that he has this beautiful family, that he was going to either try to save them, or he would know that as he was trying to save his family, he could be shot and killed, and he would be gone, and his family would have to survive without him.
Mm.
But he still got himself out of that chair, grabbed that shotgun, and ran. There's something interesting and beautiful about his soul that I would love to understand, because that's exactly what we need to uplift and celebrate.
Yeah,
it's actually a good origin story for his kid. To be like, if you were doing a movie about someone, or like a Marine or a law enforcement guy who did something great, and it's like his origin was that his dad risked his life, and that was the message he got, and that's why he went on to become a hero.
I'm going to tell you what this guy is. He is a normal man who did something extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what, in history of this country, it's not somebody who was born into some fancy family.
Right.
It was a normal person who was put in an extraordinary situation and did something extraordinary with the power of that moment.
I don't know. When I think of the Careys and the Bushes and some of the prestigious families of the country, they've done amazing things. Just absolutely
amazing. Indeed.
I'm definitely in a maze when I think about those
things. He took his barber's shotgun. He actually helped evacuate people out of the building.
Well, do we have Medal of Honor for police, local, state police, things like that?
I don't know.
Maybe we should.
But I wanted to add before we move on, because our chat's full of people screaming Fed, is that this guy worked for the federal government. He worked for the Border Patrol. He wasn't a local cop. The local cops didn't do jack.
Deep state.
Ah! Fed. That's it. I knew it.
Deep state was here to help us.
You raised a great question, though. Is there a Medal of Honor, an award? Will this guy be recognized? It will be curious. The next State of the Union is in 7 months. Whoever the president invites to his balcony is always a very important, very symbolic. I will bet right now that Biden will take someone from Buffalo to highlight the racism angle, because that is what we do in our American politics. Mm-hmm. He will not take a hero and say, this is a guy who risked everything. He will take a victim and say, and it's because of this country that victimhood like this exists, because you're all bad. Vote for me again. So that's what I think is going to happen.
It's a little speculative of me, but I don't think they'll build a statue for this guy.
No.
But they built a statue for George Floyd.
Yes. Pray for us, St. George
Floyd. Who was on fentanyl at the time of death.
Indeed he was.
Oh, more than that.
Five.
Nah, he should not have died. I mean, I'm not trying to say that in any way, but we don't want to make those guys heroes.
No,
George Floyd died, and it's tragic. And in many ways, you know, I also think that he was a flawed human being. We don't want people just to die, but we don't tell our children to look up to the people who are dying in these tragic things and who have lived pretty bad lives. We want kids to look up to this guy, Jacob Alvarado.
I don't know his name.
Who was getting a haircut.
Yeah.
And then decides, he gets a text from his wife, that's the story, and then says, you know, she says, I love you, and he rushes in to help save. I mean, he wants to save his family, but he helps evacuating a bunch of other people, too.
Get Jacob Alvarado on the show.
That is a great idea. Might have to try that, yeah.
I think, you know, just and asking the question, where'd you come from?
Well, he's also CBP, so I'd love to talk to him.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'll get a lot of questions. Yeah. He'd be great, guys.
Ask him if they really whip people across the border.
That's what I want to know.
When you're on horse
I went to Austin, and I was hanging at a hotel and flipping through the channels. I can't remember which news station turned on automatically. And it was this documentary. And it was just the weirdest Jussie Smollett-level hoax, BS, leftist propaganda. And it was playing this dark music and showing all these awful photos of, like, Trump supporters and Trump looking angry. And then it showed the Border Patrol guy with the rain.
Yeah.
Police.
Where they tried to convince people he was whipping them. It's just not real.
No.
These people believe Jussie Smollett hoaxes every single day.
Jussie is free again, right? Like,
that's what I heard last night.
He hasn't been put back in jail.
Well, that's what I heard last night.
He's still, yeah.
But you know what's not?
He's got a movie coming out.
State, they're real.
Yeah, for sure.
So, am I going to be run out of this place?
Is that what's going to happen? No, absolutely not.
I prefer the term administrative state.
There you go. Yeah.
Yes.
Speaking of, you were part of the administrative state.
I was. That's true.
Why did you leave?
Two reasons. The first was my brother was still is an alcoholic, but is needed to be in rehab. So I left to go make a bunch of money to get him into rehab. So thank God he's sober and doing better now.
Woo.
The other was I saw a lot of people who no longer were there for the right reasons. I can't talk a lot about the programs that I was involved in, but the upshot is that they were lying to the White House and the NSC and the oversight committees about how successful we were being at certain things. And I was like, you guys, this is incorrect. And they basically just told me to go F myself, right? So after a while, you know, you were baptized as I was, you know, born and raised in rural America. My family loved the country and, you know, cousins who joined the, you know, military and all that. So joining the CIA was an extension of that. So you would have thought, as I did for many years, that everybody would want to remain committed to the mission, to the country. But then I got to this level where I'm involved in various programs and I'm watching them lie to our elected leaders, which I don't know, in hindsight, like how naive of me not to think that some of my colleagues would lie to protect themselves so they could get promoted, right? But it was so just disheartening that I was like, I'm not going to spend another 20 years of my life around these people who aren't here for the right reason. I got it. I'm out. I'm done.
So do you think, does the CIA have a little bit of an Enron problem where the numbers are inflated, but everyone likes the concept of the result, and so they're like, yeah, this is great. Great
company. In insider knowledge here, every 2 years or so, people rotate out of positions. So you want to be able, in your evaluation, you want people to say, oh, things were better than when you got here. Nobody wants to say, hey, when I got into this position, I actually did a little bit of scrubbing, and this is a bunch of bullshit. The programs that we're telling the downtown, you know, that is to say the White House and Congress, that are all great, actually they're garbage. Nobody wants to be that guy. So everybody waits 2 years and then leaves. So everybody kicks this corrupt can down the road. And so that's what's happening inside the agency to this day.
So term limits for administrative state. This has been brought up to me multiple times, and I'm a fan. What you're saying is absolutely solidifies my belief in that. If they're waiting 2 years to get in a promotion or to get – and they'll just say whatever they need to say, I mean, that's the deepest, darkest crap.
So whether it's – so I don't know what the solution is other than you've got to have more sunshine into those kinds of systems. And you have to have people, you know, raise their hand to the inspector general, et cetera, to say, hey, there's an issue. But ultimately, this is about the House and the Senate, the oversight committees and their staffs, knowing what questions to ask and holding the people in power to account. And that's true at the FBI, too. Mm. That's what has failed over these past number of years with all these FBI agents who did this ridiculous crap in Michigan, you know, setting those guys up. We saw it with guys like John Brennan. Who knew damn well that there was no Trump-Russia collusion. But he left the agency and he went around the country for 2 years saying it was all but true, if not absolutely true. And he knew it wasn't.
I knew. James Clapper as well. Sorry to cut you off.
Yet another one.
Clapper with when they're talking about the PRISM spying network that they had uncovered and asked if they'd been spying on American people. His response was not wittingly, knowing full well, yes, you have been spying on the American people.
They built a big station, like a big building in the middle of nowhere to do it.
Under oath, he perjured himself. Congress did nothing.
So here's what the deep state is. I'm going to give you an example. A guy named Aldrich Ames. He was a CIA officer back in the 1990s. And he decided he was going to spy for the Soviet Union. And so he did. And then he was caught by the FBI. And they asked him, Aldrich, why'd you do it? And he said, because I know what's best for this country and its national security, and I'm going to act on it. So the deep state are these people who have profound powers who decide that based on their own politics, their own beliefs, they're going to do whatever the hell they want to do, irrespective of the law, and then they get away with it.
So was it like a corporate governance, basically, that got built in 1946? Is that right after World War II? Eisenhower basically put this thing together?
That's the upshot, yeah. Through the Second World War, there was something called the OSS that was kind of the External Intelligence Service, and then obviously the FBI preceded that. But, it was this... There was a need for foreign intelligence to understand what our adversaries are doing and to get ahead of that, right? So I get the need, and that remains. But the problem is when you give people any human power, some percentage of them are going to abuse it. Mm. And the more power that you give them, at some level, you're going to have more and more people who abuse it. It's just the nature of humanity. So how do you bridle that? How do you manage it? And there are different people who answer that in different ways. Maybe you don't do it at all because it's just too risky. You get rid of the CIA altogether, or you manage it better.
I always wonder if the deep state is the, and correct me, the organization itself is so big and so well entrenched that by the time there's a new president and they switch out John Podesta for who's the guy now? Bill Burr is the comedian.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll be Bill Burr.
That would be fun. Bill Byrne, right? Right. I mean, by the time you swap these people out, doesn't matter who's at the top. Like I'm doing my thing, and you know he doesn't know I exist. I know who he is, just to stay out of his hair. Is there some truth to the fact that the apparatus is so big that the people at the top they rotate and no one cares?
That's absolutely true, and this gets back to the point that was made about the whether it be term limits, even in your bureaucracy, your mid-level guys, or it's just a size issue. You just expanded the state in the past 20, 30 years to such an extent that there are so many people who have so many entrenched interests that, A, it slows down your mission, but then, B, you get more and more people who can do more and more damage to your country because you give them such expansive powers. Mm. So I'm a big fan of actually reducing not just the size of government, generally speaking, which it's true, but specifically the deep state, as it were, the agency, the FBI.
I certainly think the administrative state, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, is a serious problem. But what about the argument, and I'm not saying it's a good argument, I'm just saying this is the argument made, that if we curtail our powers internationally and domestically, China will take over, and then we'll be living in a unipolar Chinese superpower, you know, planet.
So here's the deal. CIA ain't going to stop China. Mm. The CIA and the FBI are not going to stop China. The FBI starts at least 10 cases every day against China right now. We have over 100,000 Chinese nationals who come into this country every year. So the issue isn't – it is like a dam that is bursting. And we're trying to put our finger in it to stop it. You have good leadership within the White House and the House and the Senate that understands that China is a threat and starts treating them as such. The spies ain't going to fix this one. The FBI ain't going to fix this. They just won't. So we don't need to expand the administrative state to fix this problem. It's a political problem. You have to understand that China hates us. They're trying to destroy us. We are their enemies. And so you start – changing that relationship. So, for instance, you take your damn economy out of China. Mm. You,
Do you think Trump could have stopped China?
I think he tried with his trade deal. I mean, he basically said, look, you guys start buying more of our stuff because you're stealing our stuff, right? So that's the thing that right now people are forgetting. Biden is actually thinking about getting rid of the tariffs. Mm-hmm. But Trump actually said, look, no, the tariffs ultimately are about saying to the Chinese, you still steal billions of dollars of our economy, our intellectual property every fucking year. So you're going to start paying more through these tariffs, or it's a penalty, right? So now Biden's going to get rid of them. Well, then what lesson did the Chinese learned.
Yeah.
They can keep stealing our
stuff. So my question, I suppose, was if Trump was working towards ending this expanding dominance of the Chinese economy and taking of our infrastructure, our manufacturing, things like that, I should say, our economic infrastructure, and the spies weren't able to stop it, but they were able to stop Trump, they effectively propped up China. They've secured our doom on the global stage.
Yeah.
I will point out it's not China, though. It is the CCP, the occupying force of that land.
Well, amen.
The actual
amen.
Government of China is the Republic of China, located in Taiwan, and they are in very good terms with
what
us
would,
right now.
What That's would true. The deep That's state correct. Say well, if China...
Ian, you are right.
Thank you, sir.
What would the deep state say if China unleashed this, like, let's just call it a virus, and like it went worldwide? Would there be penalties according
CCP.
To...
CCP.
FCCC.
CCP. The Chinese people are, man, they're stuck under that... totalitarian occupying force for real right now. And Mao like seized control.
But removing the economy from China, we saw during COVID how 90-95% of our pharmaceutical is based in China. Nothing has been done to change that. Now we look at similar geopolitics. We look at Ukraine and we say, boy, this was really bad that we import 60% of our fertilizer from Russia. Nothing will change about that. We used to produce our own pharmaceuticals. We used to produce our own fertilizer. The whole Gulf Coast was where we got them. Why did we ever move these industries overseas? And show me one person in the Senate, and there are lots of pro-America, I hate China, I hate Russia senators, and they're all on the right. Show me one of them who is making a concerted effort to say, I don't care what the global market says, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Merck, fertilizer, all of you have to come back to America because there is a geopolitical and national security risk to having these critical... You want to get your olive oil from Italy? That's great. Get your cheese from France? Totally cool. But your fertilizer can't be made by your enemy, nor can your aspirin. But there is not one serious piece of legislation to bring or movement to bring all these things back to America. None whatsoever. Well, just watch China do it again and say, wow, that was really bad. But, you know, thanks for my iPhone.
So this is – maybe I'm just, to be honest, a surface-level dude. I'm sitting here reading the internet thinking I know so much about, you know, geopolitics and international conflict. And I assume there's probably some CIA or FBI guy sitting in his office with all this classified information, just laughing, being like, oh, if only you really knew. Maybe that's the case.
I hope.
But I do. Because so. I want to believe. Right, exactly. I want to believe they're sitting there saying, like, here's why we had to do what we did, because we are concerned about China taking over. We are concerned about these Uyghur camps. We're concerned about the Belt and Road Initiative. We're concerned about oil exploration in South America. But really what it feels like is Trump derangement syndrome went viral within these agencies. Trump actually was doing things that were good on foreign policy, and they stopped him. They stopped him. And that's the problem of the deep state, the administrative state. You know what the media tries to do? They try to make you think the deep state is a cabal of people who meet below D.C. with robes on and have like a pentagram on the ceiling. No, it's just that people who get jobs.
That's Hollywood. That's Hollywood.
Yeah, what it actually is. That's why Ian brought up administrative state.
J. Edgar Hoover,
better term. It's people who don't get fired. They're working there for 20 years between a bunch of different presidents. And, you know, Obama gets elected. He sits down and they say, here's what's happening and here's our plan. And the president goes, okay, I guess. Dude. And so they just do whatever they want, as long as they want.
J. Edgar Hoover was the head of the FBI for 48 years, 47 some years. Like, he ran the country. He was running the country. 47 years he headed was the head of the FBI. I mean, I've never been in the FBI, but I mean, what's the power? I would imagine that power level is immense.
Amen. So particularly without going into the history of the FBI, he absolutely decided the political winners and losers of this country. And that's really what happened during the 2020 and 2016 election, particularly 2016 with Hillary Clinton and Trump, right? So after Trump was elected, you had a bunch of former CIA and FBI officials, James Comey, leaking classified information to force the appointment of a special counsel. Holy crap.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one man, an FBI director, who decided that Trump should not be in power, not because there was actual data or information that said we had a problem, but he just didn't like the guy. So it goes to the New York Times, leaks it in order to get Bob Mueller. That is J. Edgar Hoover level stuff. And we haven't seen that in a long, long time. I foolishly believed that those dark days were over, but that showed me that it ain't gone. There are still absolutely people in positions of authority and power who still do this J. Edgar Hoover stuff.
The Sussman trial stuff is crazy.
Yeah.
Mm. We had Cash Patel the other day, and it's just shocking. The FBI knew it was bunk almost immediately. You had apparently one guy testified that Hillary Clinton knew and signed off on the Russiagate narrative fabrication. Wow. Yeah.
The agent, is it Sussman himself, who lied on the FISA warrant to get these...
against Page.
To get the FISA. Yeah, so that's the same guy. It is the same level of corruption and negligence and evil and dereliction of duty on a different level, but it's the same idea as the 19 guys in Texas who stood in the hallway and listened to the gunshots. This is exactly what your mission is, and you're like, yeah, but I'm not going to do it. Like, you know this is a lie. Yeah, but I'm not going to do it. Like, you know what your job is right now, and the oath you have taken, yeah, I'm going to do the opposite.
You know, I'll tell you on one piece that in the last couple of weeks I did on my podcast and talked a lot about that doesn't, I think, get enough attention. 107,000 people last year died because of fentanyl or drug overdoses. Mm. Most of them, of the 107,000, were fentanyl. The point is, most of that comes from China. Those are precursor chemicals that come from China. China knows these companies that are producing it. They know that they, in turn, are dealing with Mexican cartel members, and it's then all feeding into this country. China is killing 100,000+ of our people. Why are we not all like outraged that the communist government in Beijing is doing this in concert and collaboration with Mexican cartels? It is just, it should be getting far more attention, certainly than even Ukraine. I mean, as much as that absolutely runs the risk of World War III, and I think we can talk about that as well, because I think we're getting there. That issue of dead Americans in this country, especially in rural America, is so real and so painful. For me personally, but for so many others, it deserves more of our attention.
And that's why, because it's rural America. And we were saying to this before the show started, if the overdoses from fentanyl and Chinese opioids were Upper East Side collegiates, this would have been stopped by now. But it's mostly rural, mostly poor, mostly hillbilly whites, and we don't really care.
They targeted farmers.
It's just, exactly. It is not a population the American government care about, because they don't like them. Even their own representatives don't like them. Look for any liberal who represents a rural state who's running for office. Even they are ashamed of their constituency. They don't care.
But I'm going to tell you right now, in Pima County, Arizona, where I am from, if you're a kid, the thing that's going to get you, in terms of the thing that's going to kill you, is fentanyl right now. Mm-hmm. It's not car accidents. It is fentanyl. And Pima County is not a rural, you know, white hillbilly area. You are right. The preponderance is absolutely, that is true. Mm. But it's hitting communities in lots of parts of this country. Black, brown, it doesn't matter. It is hitting our young people most especially, because that shit, pardon my language, is mixed up with weed or with other stuff. And they're like, hey, let's experiment. Let's try and have a good time. And then they end up dead because there's just such tiny amounts of that they end up killing you.
I find it to be an extension of the opium wars. Apparently, this is when the British and other Europeans were shuffling opium into China. They were basically colonizing China in the mid-1800s. And they were like, we're going to wreck their population, make them incapable of fighting, and then we're going to conquer it and take it as another colony, like what they did with India. But the Chinese eventually fought back and pushed them back to the coast and off and into Taiwan or Hong Kong or these islands. But it never ended for them. They play the long game. Any wise regime thinks hundreds of years in the future and will never forget what people are capable of. And that's what they're doing. They're sending it into Mexico, like you said, with the cartels, using them to run it up into the country. They're destabilizing our youth. You see it in the, you know, dysphoria movement. You see in the shootings. And the pharmaceutical companies seem to be capitalizing on it. They've actually created medical fentanyl. I don't know who's in charge. Is it AstraZeneca? Who actually prints this stuff? This stuff that they're working, colluding with the CCP.
I want to talk to you guys about guns. Because I had this tweet. It's Friday, so I want to talk about my tweet.
Oh.
I tweeted, the government should provide all 16-year-olds with a free AR-15 after they pass firearm ed in high school.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't, then once you turn 18, you should be entitled to one free AR-15 from the government after passing a general knowledge test at the Department of Gun Services. Demand universal gun ownership now, call your member of Congress, and demand they pass this legislation. A lot of people said that I was trolling. I'm not. My point was that I saw all these memes from the left where they said, we should treat guns like we treat cars. Hmm. And I was like, you think that goes only one way? they post these memes where they're like, got to get a license, got to get insurance, got to register the gun, all of that stuff. And I was like, okay, I can use that same argument and go the other direction. We allow 16-year-olds to drive cars. Okay, so 16-year-olds should get guns. We also have gun rights in the Constitution. So you want to argue for universal health care? I'll argue for my universal demand as well. Government should pay for my guns. But let me tell you where the juicy part of the tweet is at. Karl Marx said, under no pretext should workers surrender their arms and ammunition. The true leftist position on guns should be an armed workforce and the government providing guns to the people. It's just simple logic. Karl Marx, right? He said, never surrender your arms and ammunition. Well, if you're a socialist, you don't think capital is going to fund the creation of these guns, do you? It's going to be the government, and they're going to provide it.
Tim, did AOC retweet this? Is that what I'm seeing? Did she like and retweet this?
No.
No.
She will.
No. You know, that's strange. Why not?
I think the only problem I have with this tweet is that I don't think getting your gun from the government is the best thing, because if they really want to conquer you, they'll make the gun have a defect and then give it to you, and they know how to exploit the defect in the
I'm
weapon.
I'm not saying the only place to get the gun.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying you get a free one, so it's a net positive. And you'll probably want to get it checked out. But universal gun ownership, they want to argue for universal health care. I'm like, okay, cool. Well, they say health care is a human right. I say gun ownership is a human right, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, well then the government can pay for it and give everybody guns. There we go. Any objections?
No.
All right, there it is.
Your right to own does not dictate a right to receive.
Well, of course, I agree.
Okay, yeah. Sorry for the logic.
I think my only question is, at the 30,000 foot level, what are we considering the age of adulthood? So if it's 16, and I know you can drive at 16, some places in rural, you can get a farmer's license to drive a heavy equipment at 14.
Yeah.
Can't go on the road, but you can drive a $500,000 combine, right?
Yep.
It's pretty awesome. but there's another movement, though, to move the gun ownership age to 21. And I have a problem with voting at a certain age, but voting on something that you cannot fully own in a free society at another age. I don't want to be able to vote at 18, but I can't own something until I'm 21. There's the movement, as you were saying, to vote at 16. So 16-year-olds are going to make law or vote for laws, but I can't fully participate in that law for 5 more years. So if we're going to have a real equitable society, to use their words, then if you have the right to vote on something, you must have the ability to have full participation in that.
Agreed.
So if we're going to make the voting age 16, then the gun age is 16, but then the draft is 16. But I don't want my 16-year-old sending my 21-year-olds to war, telling the 18-year-olds they can't have a cigarette, a beer, or a gun. So something is wrong. If we're going to say the age of adulthood now is 21 and we are a very immature society, then it's 21 across the board.
I have a darker interpretation of their desire for a 16-year-old voting age.
Well, they're stupid.
Well,
no offense to them listening.
It's not just stupidity. It's if you're an adult at 16, that means you can do more than vote.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Because at what point can you have sex with a 35-year-old? Mm-hmm. You know, 16 now, what are they trying to do?
This is why when they try and lower the age of adulthood in a variety of ways, I'm kind of like, what are you really doing? When you look at what's going on in these schools, you know, the grooming, and I see these memes from these liberals on Facebook where they desperately try to conflate the grooming argument with banning books, and it's just like, I see this meme and it's, you know, they want to ban books, and there's like an old man with a MAGA hat yelling. And I was like, I think they were concerned about the graphic depictions of adult activities in those books that were available to children. If you're defending that, and you're doing it out of ignorance or it's willful, then either way, the outcome is the same. When you come out and then say kids should be, you know, participating in governance at 16, it's like you're creating a threshold for which we reduce the age of adulthood. I don't know if 18, you know, where that number comes about, because it certainly 200 years ago was, you know, you were 13, you're considered a man or whatever. Yeah. I don't know if I agree with that. 18 kind of feels okay. You know, gun ownership and all
for
these
everything.
Things.
Yeah.
You can be under 18 and have a gun if your parents take responsibility for it in most places, like in Wisconsin and stuff like that.
I mean, you know, growing up, family farm, we hunted, you know, from when I was a very young boy, but that was part of our culture. We were taught how to use a firearm, respect a firearm. And so it's this idea that a 16-year-old couldn't or a 14-year-old couldn't, I mean, use a firearm and be taught how to use it thoughtfully is just, it's bizarre to me because I grew up in that culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was shooting from the time I was like 10 years old.
Yeah,
my dad
right.
took us, we had like a little shooting range in our back 40. probably not really on par with what the law wanted, but my dad taught us how to use it. He taught us how to be safe with it. He said, I'll give you a dollar if you ever see the end of this gun while I'm holding it. And of course, he never gave us a dollar because we never saw it, and we understood how important that was.
Yeah.
But somebody on Twitter earlier today, I forget who it was, I'm sorry, tweeted, how many of these mass shooters were young boys raised by fathers who taught them how to hunt? Yeah. It's a very valid question. I don't think any of them ever have been.
They have no dads.
Of course not. Yeah, it's very sad.
So that's why when I, in the days after these shootings and we hear Congress stand up and say we need to pass this law or that law, this is the stuff, this is the conversation that we need to have as a country. Understanding who these individuals are, their families, the dynamics, the health, you know, mental health, all that. Because you are so right, and whoever said, tweeted that, bravo to them, because that's spot on.
Yeah, and I remember thinking, I actually had this conversation before I left the healthcare field with one of my coworkers, and his dad wasn't really involved in his life, and there was a shooting, and I was like, this is terrible, but man, I think one of the things that all of these shooters have in common is that they don't have dads, and he's like, what? That's weird. I really have to think about that. He's like, that's a super hot take. I'm like, I think it's true. Sorry, I'm afraid.
It's a couple things. It's a dad to sit down with you and say, son, you need to understand responsibility and what it means to have obligations to your community. And it's also the moment when the dad bops you on the head and said, that was dumb. What are
being
you doing?
Stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, a strong leader.
To be like, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Maybe like a dad who's got like long hair and is like a hippie with a bunch of crystals.
Who maybe he used to smoke weed in his 20s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Look, but the point here is that I think that this conversation is just as valid as, hey, what about magazine limitations? What about the type of weapon, you know, or what about the age that we should give children of, right? I think this conversation is just as important, if not more important. But you hear so oftentimes from the left, they will say, oh, here the right, you know, here the conservatives go again talking about family issues and about, you know, knock it off. Come on. It's absolutely, it should be part of the conversation.
Well, we should have a magazine limit. I really do think so. Hmm. They shouldn't. That we should limit them to it to they cannot be lower than 30.
It can't be at least, yeah.
I knew there was
a caveat there.
I saw the tail on the face. I was like, there it comes.
If we're going to look at society,
yes.
I mean, if we're going to look at society for the last four generations or so from like the baby boomers on, and we're going to say that gun violence, school shootings are the now the anomaly. Well, we have to look at that in context, right? And that's just all they want to look at is like, wow, suddenly there are incidents of shootings at schools, therefore it's a gun problem. Well, what else is happening concurrently, right? I mean, you can't just take one statistic and then isolate it. And when you look at everything else that's happening, clearly fatherlessness is a huge problem. Sexual perversion is a huge problem. You know, what I love about libs of TikTok, which is why they got banned from Twitter, is I just wish you would find some liberal teachers who are so enthusiastic about math and science as they are about their genitals.
Yeah.
These teachers, these teachers make nonstop videos about telling their kids, and I told my girl, and it's like, dude, like, do you ever talk to them about reading? Right? So right. If you look at, again, all these millions of statistics of five generations, you can't just look at the shootings and say, wow, that's an anomaly. It's a gun problem. There's lots of other things that are spiking. And if you say that, well, they're not happening, there's no correlation, then you're just a liar or you're politically motivated. The sexual perversion stuff is a huge problem. You mentioned the grooming stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we have hardcore drag shows in children's, you know, second grade classroom, and we're supposed to pretend this is normal? Quite frankly, and this is going to sound hard, and I don't want it to come out the wrong way, I'm surprised there are not more school shootings because our kids are so messed up in the head. They're told boys can get pregnant. They have tampons in their bathroom. They play on girls' teams. These kids are so confused with everything. And then their teachers don't even want to talk about English and math. They want to talk about their dating lives. Mm-hmm. And in case anyone out there starts to text, you do know I am married to a guy.
Yeah,
right? Right. So technically am in the community.
That's right.
It's a community I hate. It's alphabet soup that is degenerative, that drives me insane. But we have to talk about these things.
The way the oppression Olympics go, you're out, Daniel.
I'm not a good one. Yeah,
you're a victim. White
but,
man.
But I mean, there's a role for me to play in this because a lot of people, cis people can't have these conversations. The cisgender
you are
people
cis.
Can't.
Cis.
Am I cis?
Yes.
Oh crap! What does cis mean?
So
not trans.
Not trans. Yeah. So Ian and I. For
oh, good. I am cis. I knew I was somewhat
what
normal.
Up, cis?
What you mean to say is cishet.
Yeah, not
cisgender heteronormative.
Oh, yeah.
You are not heteronormative.
Yeah.
None of those things are real.
I know, right?
I thought I was Irish. Virtual reality.
All these different words. I don't even know what they mean. They don't even have meaning. People create them. Like they don't have meaning.
I got no problem with that. That's how language evolves.
Yeah.
If a group of language evolves. If a group of people are like, if someone isn't trans, what are they? They call it cis. It's like a math thing. I'm like, yo, I literally don't care what words you use as long as we're effectively conveying ideas to each other.
Are we?
But the problem is it's not just the creation of new words. It's the corruption of existing words.
Yeah.
Like racism, right? That's been a huge problem for a long time as to what racism really means. Now, people can come out and say cis and trans and whatever, and I'm like, as long as I understand you, we can have a conversation. But we don't understand each other anymore.
Ricky Gervais is being canceled from Netflix because of his transphobic jokes.
But they're
not transphobic.
But
they're jokes about trans people. There are jokes about Polish people. There are jokes about Catholics.
But he didn't get booted, did he?
They were threatening to, you know, pull him. I'm sure Netflix can't afford to have
Netflix
problems.
Fired their diversity people. I'm pretty sure he's safe.
He's safe.
I hope so. Yeah.
I mean, it's not a transphobic joke. It's a joke about trans people. And if you're getting made fun of, welcome to the friggin' club. You know, it's like I remember talking to a Mormon when Book of Mormon came out and he was saying that he found it very offensive, Book of Mormon. I was like, as a Catholic, let me tell you, it's about damn time someone else's religion was made fun of by mainstream culture. So welcome to being like everyone else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's what he said. Ricky Gervais said he thinks trans people should have rights and be treated like everyone else. And that's why he's going to make fun of them.
Boom.
That's what true equality is.
Right.
It is. It means if everybody is equal, then everybody is fair game for being mocked.
I talked about this a little bit on Pop Culture Crisis a couple days ago, where we were talking like if a soldier loses a limb in the military in a war or something, you don't like ha ha you losing your you don't smash people for what they don't have, but. And maybe people feel like that. They're like, I'm not normal, so you're making fun of my non-normalcy, and that's really, like, getting me where I can't defend myself. I get that. But at the same – I don't like making other people the butt of my jokes. I kind of stopped doing that just in general.
Although, you know, one of the things – if I can – so I have hung out with a ton of guys in the military who have lost arms and legs because of Iraq and Afghanistan. And I've also hung out with tons of guys who are in the military and they're gay, or we have lesbian service members, whatever it may be. The way that you know that you are in with that group is when somebody makes a crack at you.
Yeah, that's right.
I was with a guy, about 15 guys at Black Rifle Coffee Company. Most of those guys that they hire have lost limbs. Some of those guys, when they walk in, you know, they'll be like, their legs, their arms are really loud and noisy because they're half fucking robots, right? The point is that they will make fun of each other about like, hey, quiet down, man, you're rude. We're trying to have a conversation, bro. And he's like, sorry, it's my knee, you know. But they'll give each other a hard time. And it's this beautiful moment of like, you know that you are in a family, a brotherhood by just telling good jokes about each other.
There's a really great Wojak meme where it's a guy is leaving and he's like, see you later, dickheads. And they're like, screw off, you know, a-hole. And then it's like, F you. And then as soon as he's gone, they're like, that's a cool dude.
He's great.
Yes. Then it shows the women.
Oh, gosh.
And the woman's like, bye, honey. Love you. You're so sweet. See you soon. And then as soon as she's gone, what a bitch.
It's true, yeah. That's why I have fewer female friends, I think. But I wanted to say, too, that it does feel great when somebody makes a joke with you about something that maybe you can't even change, that you're just like, oh, yeah, that's actually pretty funny. And I feel like I'm part of your in-group.
Yes.
It's very valuable. It's an important part of
so much of it. Oh, sorry to interrupt there at the end.
You're good, Karen.
I wanted to capitalize on what you were saying. It's the delivery. Like, if you can deliver it in a loving way, then it's received in a loving way. But when it's in text, no one can sense.
Amen.
And they'll take Gervais's jokes and they'll put them in text and be like, look how horrible.
Yes.
And the performance has a full arc. How did he get to that point? That was a segue. They cut all that out and they just take the sentence and they're like,
context.
But I just love how all the hit pieces against Ricky Gervais are literally what he was complaining about.
Yeah.
He was actually talking about the woke cancel culture and how they're demanding special privileges because they don't want to be made fun of. But he was like, but everybody is equal, so we're all going to be made fun of. And then they write articles saying he's a transphobe and he's violent and he's dangerous. Absolutely absurd.
Yeah, but I mean, the alphabet soup, which is really run by just communists, like all minority groups in activism right now, you can't have it both ways. You can't say this immutable characteristic makes us so special and so unique and so different that we have to celebrate it, but we also want to get treated like everybody else. Mm. Right? If you want to get treated like everybody else, that stinks. Because when you treat like everybody else, you're standing in line, right? We all want, you know, the Emerald Club status at the airport so that we can bypass all the lines and we can have a fancy drink. But equality is not fun. So the Alphabet Soup people, like, we want our special, and God, it's almost June 1, and then I have a whole month.
No.
Oh,
no. Don't worry, don't worry.
Flip your Ukraine flag and put up
your pride
rainbow flag.
Just unfollow all the brands and follow the Saudi Arabian ones, and you're good.
That's a flag pack. I love it.
You said something earlier, Daniel, I thought was really interesting, where you said you were almost surprised that there weren't more shootings.
I am.
I don't want to take away too much from where we were headed with the jokes and Ricky Gervais, because I love this conversation, but I've had that same thought, like, why is it not? But then I'm thinking about people driving on the road and how so many people drive past each other all day on the road over and over, these thousands or, you know, hundreds of miles, 140 miles difference, 70, and they don't hit each other because they don't want to. And most people don't want to hurt each other.
No.
It's very, very, very rare. And it's more of an aberration on these kids that's causing it. I'm actually not surprised that there's,
but
that you, they're look, trying look, not, people don't want that. That's like,
look at the tribal
a desperation
conflicts.
Tactic.
It can reach a point. So, Northern Ireland, for instance. I remember I was getting a tour of Northern Ireland, and there's like a memorial for when, you know, a group of guys went and shot and killed another group of guys. And, you know, on one side of town, they're like, these guys were heroes. Another side of town, like, these guys were villains. And it's just like, there was no reason to do that. They didn't earn or gain anything. It was just pure tribalism. Mm. You can look at the literal tribalism with, you know, what we've seen in Africa, where one day one tribe goes out and starts beating and killing the other tribe. For almost no reason, just the hatred within them. When you start to see some of these tweets where there was one guy who said, I wish all Republicans get cancer and die excruciating deaths, it's getting scary.
Mm.
It's getting to this point where, you know, you turn on the TV and you know MSNBC is not even trying to talk to you.
Mm.
But I mean, even we do it. We know there's a group of people who don't care to watch us or even listen to what we have to say, so we just eventually tune them out. But this creates separate spaces which is ripe for, you know, developing a hatred more and more for the opponent, for the other.
And that's the problem with a lot of our elected leaders. And, you know, Biden is president right now. So you can say, well, you tell me Trump was president. That's a hypothetical. Biden is president. And he had his moment after this shooting to say something. And what he chose was nothing but division and attacking his political enemies. He did not offer the slightest sense of healing, of sorrow. He didn't even evoke the names and memories of these kids and talk about, you know, just an evil in society. He talked about the NRA, and he talked about Republicans who won't pass common sense. He resurrected 40-year-old talking points. It might have been the election of 1976, right? And so I agree with you. You know, we are falling into these rival camps, but if our leaders don't start,
I want to pull up this tweet thread from Zach Seward, who is the editor-in-chief at Quartz, who posted one of the most deceptive, falsely framed articles I've ever seen.
Such a lie.
It's a really good example of the problems we face.
Yes.
Before I start this by criticizing the mainstream media for lying to you, I want to point out that there absolutely are conspiracy theorists and lunatics and cult members on the right. They exist.
Sure.
But they're not VC-funded.
Hmm.
They don't have investors who are giving them all of this money. There are some small right-wing outlets, conservative outlets, that do get funding, but they're not nearly as bad as this.
Hmm.
They wrote a story. We ordered the same gun used in Uvalde. Here's how easy it was. He says it was just like ordering groceries. Click, checkout, done. He's getting roasted for this.
Seriously.
Because while in the piece it does mention you have to go through a background check and all that stuff, the way they frame it is incredible. Take a look at this. He says, at no time were we asked for proof of age or of a clean criminal record, both of which are legally required to buy a firearm. That will happen when we pick up the gun at our local licensed dealer.
That's right.
The headline is everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Here's how easy it was. They're trying to convince you. Not only that, but he goes on to say it was an assault rifle. He says, some people don't know how easy it is to go online and buy an assault rifle. He didn't buy one, though. He did not buy an assault rifle. It's just a misrepresentation. And this is what leads people who are traditional liberal or trusting in the news into believing wrong
Amen.
Information.
Mm-hmm. So what this tells me is he's not actually interested in having a thoughtful conversation. It's about an agenda, right?
Mm-hmm.
So very clearly this is about creating this drumbeat, this hysteria to ban not just this gun, but really all guns, right? So it's a war then on guns. And if in fact that's the idea, then the question becomes, particularly from that outlet that we know as a lefty outlet, why do they want to remove all guns? Is it really just about trying to save the kids in school? I'm not so sure that's true. I think most people would say there's probably another agenda here. So that kind of headline, by the way, we know that Americans rarely read down into an article. I think that, that is around 60 or 70% of people only read the headline. And then the remainder of that is only the first paragraph. So very, I think 3 or 5% of people actually read the whole story. So these folks know that.
I want to give a shout out to a journalist. This is a story I did, I covered just almost 3 years ago.
I remember this.
From Business Insider. This journalist wrote, I tried to buy a gun at Walmart twice and roadblocks left me empty-handed both times. This was actually a good story. Mm-hmm. And I give credit to this journalist. She had, you know, misconceptions about what buying a gun was like. She went to a Walmart and said, I'm going to see what happens. And when she got roadblocked, she wrote that she was.
Good for her.
This is like one of the biggest segments I've ever done. It's got 2.7 million views. I'm surprised, but... You know, I didn't criticize her and mock her. I was like, this is great. A reporter actually decided to investigate what it's like to get guns because they weren't familiar
Amazing.
With it. And they were honest with their audience about not being able to buy one. That's the reality.
Yeah. Well, the shocking thing about courts is that there are two dozen outlets just like that, right, between courts and Axios and Mother Jones. And you just go on and on and on. And they're all the same. And they're all funded by... basically the same venture capitalist lefty ideologue billionaires. They all have the same agenda. They're all intermarried, right? Which is weird. They all know each other. Kind of like the one conspiracy, not that conspiracy, the one thought as who the leaker is of the Supreme Court document when went through of, you know, who's married to who and who was a bridesmaid at whose wedding. Mm-hmm. They all know each other.
It's a caste system.
There's no one on the... There are very few outlets on the right of this side. There are a couple, right? We know them. The Beacon, the Daily Caller, they're great publications. But they're paltry in number compared to
right.
the left.
Mm. And you look at the funding that goes into these left-wing Democrat or whatever publications, hundreds of millions of dollars. And then you look at right-wing publications who sometimes get some funding, but not really.
Yeah. What was that CIA program where they were working directly with media?
Was that Mockingbird?
Yeah, I think it is.
There's two of them, I'm pretty sure.
I thought you were going to ask me about the time that we operated on the cat, and the cat was going to be actually a listening device.
Oh, yeah,
did it survive?
That's
another one.
Is that true?
That's a real thing.
That is true.
They tried.
We did that.
People love cats.
I'm sorry.
They let them into their bed.
Everybody loves cats. I'm so sorry.
They tried like implanting a microphone in the cat.
Yes. So this is what they did. They actually put the listening device in the ear, and then they used the antenna, and they built another part in the back, kind of in between the shoulders. And what they did is they took the cat because, hey, it's just a cat. It's innocuous. And they took the cat and they set it next to two gentlemen to test it on a park bench.
I know what happened, I think.
And unfortunately, Kitty did not stay there
of course
on the park
not.
Bench to listen.
The cats do what cats do.
So the cat ran, unfortunately, in front of a taxi cab.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh.
And cat didn't want to be part of it.
Nope.
The kitty
good for the cat.
Did
the
not
cat
survive.
Ultimate sacrifice.
The cat did the honorable thing.
You can't force a cat to join the deep state.
No, you can't.
Individuals.
So,
no.
But speaking of Mockingbird, which I brought up, what the heck? This is from 1948. I mean, this has been going on for a long time. The CIA, after formation, was like, we got to control the media.
It's not just Mockingbird. We talked about this with Luke Rutkowski of We Are Change. There was something that happened in the 70s where a senator, I think, came out and said the CIA is working directly at these news outlets.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was Mockingbird.
Well, so there was a huge dust-up throughout the 70s where basically the House and the Senate were like, you guys are doing way too much in the CIA. And they had committee hearings. So Frank Church was one of the senators, we from Idaho. And there were others. They looked into this. And the CIA director, they called him on the carpet, both overtly, that is to say, out in public and then and behind the curtain. And like, you guys are killing way too many people. Without authorization, and you all bunch of cowboys, and some of these programs that you're talking about were part of that conversation that we need to rein you in because we've given you too much power, and y'all are abusing it. And it's not just you, the CIA; it's the president and all the president's men, as it were, who are like, hey, you know, with the military, we can't do certain things, but we can use this tool at the CIA, and we can have them go kill various people or foment uprisings, etc. Right. Or, yes, the media piece. We can start to control and manipulate. And so, again, it gets back to this. If you give people power, some percentage of them are going to abuse it. But if you give them a whole bunch of power, it is game on in terms of your country. And that's really, for me, in the past 5-10 years, has completely changed my understanding of giving so much power to the CIA or NSA or FBI. They will abuse it. They have abused it. And we've got to pull that back, both in terms of the size and the authorities because they have too much. Still a lot of great people doing great work at those places, but you give them too much power and you're going to have these problems. And we, our country's in trouble because of it.
Mm. Yeah, I think a lot about the people because I speak a lot of crap about the administrative state and like how it's overblown. But I think the people, the other night I was like, I don't want to hurt these people. Like, not that like the horseback riders in 1902, I mean, the automobile was coming. They still lost their jobs.
Yeah.
I don't want to see these people lose their gigs. And the problem is when they're the ones that control the assassination attempts, so anyone that's going to try and unseat them from their gig is a real threat. It has a big, like, yo, you don't want to anger people that control the button, like, basically. Yeah. But if it is, I mean, you think we'd be better off without these organizations?
I think of the Fed in Michigan who's doing a covert op, and he's on a chat room with some guy who's like, I hate Governor Whitman. I think we should assassinate her. And he's like, let's plan the kidnapping. You know, and then they're having meetings. And then all of a sudden, at no point, people are like, wait a second. We're actually going to plan to kidnap the governor just to trap this one aren't we taking this a little too far, guys?
Yeah.
You know, they're ordering vans, and someone's going to Hertz, and they're picking up rope. And it's like, I think we're getting a little too excited about kidnapping the governor, guys. Like, I know we want to catch this bad dude, but this is getting a little crazy. I don't, at what point does, yeah, when you said they need to be reined in, I think that's an example of reining it in.
Amen.
And it kind of strikes me bizarre that no one in the hierarchy was like, I think you guys need to slow down the kidnapping plan. Right? Like, this is a little crazy.
Would it look more like if it was reining in? Would it be like, this NSA no longer exists? Like, what was the NSA formed? 2000? 2001? Was it after 9/11? Or has it been around longer than that?
It's been around longer, but yeah, look, here's where I come down on this. I think it's absolutely reasonable based on what we have seen over the past 10 plus years, certainly since the 2016 election. It's reasonable for people to say the intelligence community has grown too big and too powerful. Just like it did back in the 1970s, we need to remove some of the authorities. We need to have more oversight because we recognize that there might be a need for collection of foreign intelligence to understand what our adversaries are doing. Fine. Or a domestic, you know, law enforcement capacity. We need to find some bad guys here in the country. Fine. But it's gotten too big and there's too much power and we need to pull that back in. And that happens after we have the House and the Senate. If they actually functioned, they would do the investigations into that to figure out how bad the problem is, and then we figure out how deeply we have to rein it in. Absent a functional Congress, that's when the American media is supposed to do the work, do that investigative work to expose some of this stuff. But when you have a media that is so in the tank for, you know, folks, particularly on the left, then what's their incentive to actually get to the bottom of some of these abuses? There's no outside function right now that's keeping power in check. The House and the Senate, nope. The President, nope. Our media, nope. That's the problem of this moment.
And I think it's compounded by the fact that, no offense, you all seem to be really bad at your job. I mean, in the sense that it's like,
well, not you,
you know,
Brian.
Our intelligence shows that, you know, Afghanistan will stand on its own. No. Our intelligence shows that Kiev will fall within 3 days. No. It's like our intelligence shows, it's like, do you guys have anything right? Like, is there anything that is accurate?
Okay. So first of all, totally fair. So on my podcast, President's Daily Brief, we covered this. We talked about this. You as taxpayers are paying billions and billions of dollars to the intelligence community to act on your behalf. You should be asking questions if they're falling short. So that's fair.
I want to pull up this article from Army Times. Foreboding Army PSYOPs recruitment video shows who's pulling the strings. Ooh. A lot of people were bringing this up to us saying it was a really, really creepy video. I want to play it. It is a little long, but I've not seen it. But Daniel was just bringing up that the CIA, their intelligence agencies, get so much wrong. And I wonder, are they really getting it wrong? Or are they just trying to manipulate you?
Hmm.
Perhaps you assume that they're a bunch of bumbling, slipping on banana peels, and maybe that's what they want you to think. Because what it was, Sun Tzu had quotes about this, right? When you're strong, make your enemy believe you are weak. When
that's
you
right.
are weak, make your enemy believe you are strong. So I've never seen this. I don't know if we can play the full thing, but we'll play Ghosts in the Machine, a controversial psychological operations advertisement from the Army.
Is there something?
Nice. Good?
If your opponent is of choleric temper, seek to irritate him.
That sounds like Sun Tzu.
Pretend to be weak, that he may grow arrogant.
Yep,
you see?
My man.
Sun Tzu. All right. This is getting pretty creepy.
Love that guy.
Oh, clowns.
Strong start.
Have you ever wondered?
The peaceful pro-democracy demonstration in China comes to a violent and bloody end.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Who's pulling the strings?
Wolves hiding nearby, whispering.
Born from the ashes. Is that the emblem of the psychological operation or something? A world at war? You'll find us in the shadows.
This is inspiring.
At the tip of the spear. A threat rises in the east.
What the hell is this?
Russia invades Ukraine.
Oh, it's pretty new.
Yeah, it's
very Yeah, this is from earlier this month. Warfare is evolving.
Who put this out?
This is a fourth PSYOP group.
I am intrigued.
And all the world's a stage. Yo, this is creepy.
Holy it's like God. A movie.
Shakespeare.
There is another very important phase of warfare. It has as its target not the body, but the mind of the enemy.
Target of psychological warfare is against the enemy's mind.
It is words and ideas.
Ammunition used by Cywar.
Anything we touch is a weapon.
Its mission is to influence the thoughts of the
we
enemy
can deceive.
Soldiers. And at the same time,
is expected and encouraged
persuade,
to study foreign languages and the social sciences such
change,
as history, economics, and sociology.
Influence.
You must have a broad and sympathetic understanding of all
inspire.
Phases of human experience.
Gripping at my skin, the walls of night closing.
We come in many forms.
Oh, but the use of this force as an integral part of combat has now taken on new form.
We are everywhere.
That's what they want you to think.
Second score.
To say my last goodbye.
A feeling in the dark. A message in the stars. Ghosts in the machine. What are we? Cywar.
What the heck?
What is this? Really it?
Who put that together?
Army PSYOPs recruitment video. That's what they're saying.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't want to fact check that.
No
that's
way.
Interesting.
I can respond to that silliness. Okay.
It's all fake. It's all boring.
Oh, my God. Okay, a couple of things.
I would join.
Right.
All right, I'm
no.
in. Let's go.
So I'll tell you, we get by, that is to say, in the intelligence community, folks get by with this kind of stuff. Everybody thinks that, you know, intel people are 10 feet tall and they're scary and amazing. They can do anything they want. James Bond. But I'm telling you, that ain't how it is. All right? I can share this story with you. I was looking to work with our group of folks who go out into the world and hire NOCs, right? Those are people that we would never officially recognize as intelligence officers. And I asked our NOC hiring officials, what do you look for? And she said to me, we don't look for the F students, obviously, or the D students, as it were, sort of A, B, C, D, F, the grades, right? D or F students, those kids wouldn't work. But we can't hire A and B because they're too good and smart, mm-hmm. and they don't want to put up with the bureaucratic baloney that this place has. So what we have to try to find is like a good solid C-plus student.
That's me.
Right. So you, sir, well, I'll put in a good word for you, you know, since I'm still a Fed.
I think it actually is just like the movies because, you know, I've seen a lot of Burn Notice.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you
yeah.
do look and talk like Michael Westman.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay.
Just
so no matter what I say.
So they want people that are not so adherent to authority that they'll get A's and B's because that's what they're told to do, but they're not so stupid that they can't follow along.
It's that
they're willing to join, but they're also willing to betray.
A and B students are after they have ambition, but they want efficiency. They want accomplishments. They want it's. You can go out into the private sector and earn a ton of money. You can go be successful as your A and B students, but your C plus student they tend to struggle more in life. So you need somebody that isn't quite
tip of the spear, as that video just said, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what, but that shouldn't be true, by the way. We should want A students, and B students working for our government because we want efficiency. We want smarts. We want the best we can get. So I don't buy that video because of that, having been on the inside. But I understand why people might think that that's true. The only other quick caveat I'd add is, there is one part of me that loves that because when I was out as an officer, I was meeting with a source and he was like, why aren't you taking notes? I'm telling you all these great and amazing things. Well, I didn't need to. I was able to capture it. And he paused. He's like, wait a minute. I've seen the movies. Do you have a microphone in your shoe? And I was like, I do. And he was like, oh, it's so cool.
Burn Notice was a cool show, man. One of my favorite scenes is when – you guys have seen Burn Notice, right?
Negative, no.
You never seen it? It's so good. So it's this former CIA contractor, and he's always trying to – he's basically a contractor now for private individuals, trying to help the little guy. And he explains to you how he does things and why, and it's fascinating. So he's like – he's trying to scare a bad guy. So he takes a cell phone, tapes it to a box, and then runs the power cable to the wall to make him think there's a bomb. Hmm. And he was like, that's like the psychological manipulation stuff. So that's what that show does. I love that show. That show is amazing.
Mm. So what I will tell you, that this contracting thing is actually really important. So we just watch, if this is the Army's trying to convince everybody that they're the 10-foot monster. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about power and the authority to influence and persuade, that power does not sit within the military and it doesn't sit within the CIA. It sits in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. It sits in New York and in D.C. in terms of those media operating rooms deciding what the editorial line for the day is going to be, what the American people need to think about. It's the people who write the headlines, knowing that 70-80% of people don't read the story, just the headline. That's your power. And if you want to shape an agenda, if you want to push people into believing something, that's where you spend your time and your money. It ain't in some whiz-bang, you know, CIA operation that's propaganda, which, by the way, that was good back in the 50s, and it's not so great now. But anyway, that's where your power is.
One thing about the video, if we could ask your huge followers, I feel like I'm pretty well traveled in this country. I can't think of what city has bright orange subway cars.
Yeah.
So your followers right now, if you could be like, oh yeah, that's the subway in. I showed it twice, and I'm like, I know America pretty well. I grew up in New York City. I know subways well. I can't think. So if anyone out there,
it's not so much the color or the shape of them. Maybe it wasn't an American city, but I will say I learned something in my quest to purchase Times Square billboards. You can actually buy an entire train and put whatever you want on it.
Let's do that.
Cool. Yeah,
I would just love to think that the Army used like the subway of Amsterdam. You know, for a recruitment video.
I've been thinking a lot about using the media, like you were saying, to, I guess, manipulate is the word, not, you know,
sounds like people are saying, someone said Japan.
Oh, interesting.
Maryland, I saw Denmark. Yes. Oh, okay. People are just saying whatever.
Nah, they're just saying whatever.
Nah, it's nonsense.
But, like, how do you use the media to please everyone? And I know you can't please everyone all the time, Abraham Lincoln quote. But, like, I want to really make the world better and create new technologies like running fresh water, solar-powered heat, you know, things that will make us more resilient as a species, make people laugh, make people relax. Like even the head of the CIA and Kim Jong-un want to laugh and relax a little bit. But I also got to make sure people have enough food. I don't know if there's people that actually want to starve the population so that it grows slower. You hear about Bill Gates talking about reducing the growth rate. And I don't know if there are people that really want that, which seems crazy, but other than that, like do you think we could actually use the media? I mean, that it's possible.
Well, look, are there people in this world who have a particular agenda for an environmental issue or the global population or whatever, and then they use their money to affect that outcome? Damn straight. I mean, we have foundations in this country, all over the world, in fact, but the United States have a massive number of private family foundations that chase after whatever their own family's goals might be. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's not. It wouldn't be a wild assumption to hear or an argument to hear somebody say this family or this person really gets excited about X issue. Now they're really going to change all of our lives just because they and their big money want to change it. So absolutely there's precedent for that. Every day we've got it. But the second piece, though, tell me again, it's more of like
I don't know. I'm asking if it's possible. I mean, I know you don't have the answer, but you think it's possible to fix this planet, bring people together, like all of us together?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. And real quick,
sorry to interrupt. Watching the ad, there's an advertisement, and it looks to be in German.
Oh, interesting.
So
then it was made by the army.
In the subway. It looks like it's
German. Yeah. So we're talking that was the German army that was putting that out?
That's a lot, a heck of a lot better
than
that's
our how
army
good the psychological warfare is.
Yeah, it's meta.
They kept showing the Statue of Liberty. That's why I was like, they're trying to make you think it's New York, but that's not.
Let's be really honest for a second. Europe's military is a joke. Come on. In Ukraine, do you recall when things were bubbling up? What did Germany offer the Ukrainians? 5,000 helmets. Get out of here. Their military is absolutely hollowed out. So, anyway, that's ridiculous. But I will tell you, in terms of the media stuff, how can we shape? How can we encourage? How do we grow as a people, as a country, as a species, whatever it might be? No joke, and I'm not saying it because I'm here. It's this. These kinds of shows are where it happens because what you do is you encourage people to think for themselves and to think critically. Mm-hmm. You give them information and you say, hey, look, here's my bias. Here's what I think. Here's the data that supports my argument. But I'll tell you what, your call. You decide. It's up to you. That's what we have to encourage each other to do. That's what I do in my podcast. That's what you all do here on this show every day. That's how we shape the world. We now control the information. We put it out there. And if people trust us, not just because, oh, they seem smart, but they know that day in and day out when we talk to them, we say, here's the data. You decide. Here's why it's important to you, but it's your call. Then people are less like, what are you trying to do to me? What are you trying to get me to buy? What are you trying to like manipulate me to think? All I'm doing is saying, here's the information. Here's what I think, but y'all make the call.
Well, that's what's so fascinating about then the role of tech, right? So here's the data. You make the decision. I work in the environmental and energy space, and here's the data. It's like, so you don't believe in climate change. I'm deplatformed from Facebook. You're not allowed to be a climate denier on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And you say, well, I'm not denying anything. I'm just saying here's a set of facts that need to be discussed. Yeah. Not on our platform because you don't care. And what you just said, sometimes you strike me that you say some of the sweetest, most like humanitarian things. And you said, I make the world a better place and give, you know, solar heat and clean water. You know where they didn't discuss any of that sentiment if you paid attention the last couple of days was Davos. All those world leaders gathered and they talked about what we will do. Oh, there's the photos of that.
I had to know.
Confirm? Germany?
Berlin.
All right. It's Berlin.
So did we know this? That was the German army that was like joining our PSYOPs group?
I don't know why we
went to the filter on
you know who was the last one that made it join the German army, Ed? I'm just saying.
They bought stock footage.
They did. They bought stock footage.
It seemed like a cheaply made
subway
video.
Subway car, from Getty Images. But anyway, your sentiment of how do we find solutions to the problems that will make the world a better, more peaceful, more healthy, more prosperous place at the individual level. You looked at those Yahoos and Davos, and all they did was talk about what can we do to make them obey. Or how do we cut countries off the global monetary and banking system if they won't vaccinate their people? And everyone claps. And John Kerry, how do we punish people that will not accept climate change? And everyone claps. That whole thing should have built a wall around Davos and forced them to live there and given them some primitive weapons and Hunger Games.
We gotta hit Super Chats.
Sorry.
If you haven't already, would you kindly smash that like button and subscribe to the channel? Share the show if you really do like it. Head over to timcast.com, become a member. No member segments today, but we do that Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. We're gonna read some Super Chats. I'm gonna start with one that's just, it's closer to the end and then we'll go back to the beginning. But, Catman says, Tim, I listen on Spotify normally. You should put something to mark the ads around the 27-minute mark talking about death penalty. Your ad read started with, I'd like to know where my meat comes from.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Whoa.
Great timing. You know, that's how it works.
We cannot control that. I'm sorry.
That's great.
All right. Spiro Floropoulos says, sources say.online, Tim's word queue idea, is in beta mode. If anybody at TimCast wants access to try it, please reach me. I've emailed Spin the UFO before. Or tell me who and how to contact to give access.
I don't understand that.
Oh, I'll explain it to you. Do you want to check the Spin the UFO for Spiro Floropoulos?
Yeah,
so,
I can.
I've been having this thing, you know, ranting about Wikipedia, how we should sue them. You can't, Wikipedia can create a defamatory article, but because it's community generated, no one can be sued. You can't sue Wikipedia because they're protected by Section 230. Mm. You can't sue the individual editor because they don't make a complete statement. If an editor writes, Daniel Turner raises sheep or lamb, that's true, right? Mm. Okay, you can't sue that person. What if someone then goes in and changes raises to...
You know what he's going to say.
Oh, boy.
Brutalizes.
Yes. That's definitely not true.
They never said you did. They added one word. You can't sue someone for saying one word. It's not defamation. You can argue it is because of the place they put it in, but they can be like, I just put in a single word. I didn't do anything. I mean, so who do you sue?
Yeah.
I think the closest argument you can get to is, well, because of all the other words that were there, you're the one who completed the statement by changing the word. Technically that person, but they never actually said anything, so it's arguable. And I've talked to lawyers about this. They're like, I don't know who you sue. You can't sue anybody, I guess. So the idea for this program is we will create an article. We'll title it, you know, Nancy Pelosi. And then as soon as you load the page, you are placed in a queue based on when you loaded it first, second, third. So if you're the first person in, it'll say sources say blank. You get to write one word. The next person who loaded the website can put the second word. And as the article gets bigger, you'll get more and more time to figure out your word because you got to read it. But then every individual has only written one word. Who are you going to sue? So you'll have this really long article making this really ridiculous statement with no one who can be sued.
They'll try and sue the person that owns the website. That's then Wikipedia will get sued.
Exactly. You can't. It's section two. We didn't write it. It's users.
Yeah.
I love that. It's their rules. So play them.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And what we'll do, too, is we'll make it so that when you add the word, it doesn't actually put the word in the article until the article's done. Because then no one wrote the article.
Love it.
They might be able to argue that, like, well, there were 700 words already there, and you put that word in there, so it completely a statement. It's like, okay, well, we won't then. You'll read it, you'll add your word, and then once it's done, it'll go connect them all.
It's like Mad Libs, but better.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. All right, let's read some more. Ashton De Rojas says, can you let people know Schumer is planning a Senate vote on two gun control bills day after Memorial Day, and to call your state reps and senators to oppose these bills? Better yet, call your state reps and senators and demand they repeal the NFA.
Yes.
And abolish the ATF, I suppose. You know, and why don't we get some Republicans who actually want to repeal some of these gun laws?
All that
keeps happening is Republicans are like, we'll compromise with you Democrats and ban some stuff, and then Democrats just keep saying ban more.
They're just raking in the money, man. These Congress people that should have been out after 4 years, maybe 8 years.
All right, Beckmeister says New York shooters Discord username. Discord ID about me. You can't begin to imagine how we get them to do the things they do. I mean, but is that could be anybody. This could be a random crazy person who's trying to egg on people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Eden Hiddick. Tim, you are right that meds can cause these mass shootings. I say this as someone who was almost driven by medication-induced insanity into doing one. I'm willing to get into contact if you want to know more.
That's crazy.
Yeah, people go crazy.
Yeah, really.
Rob Short says, press F to abolish this Fed. Oh, no. They're talking about you.
Yeah.
I got it.
How about this? Hold on.
I thought they were talking about the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, smash the like button to end the Fed.
I'm rolling 100 sided.
Yes.
We're going to end the Fed.
Let's see what we got.
Oh, no.
I rolled an 18.
Ah, boo.
At least I'm old enough to vote.
I'm just saying, but at the end of the night, you guys have to turn everything upside down and make sure there are no bugs. You know,
yeah.
All your little knickknacks.
Lay it on, bugs. Keep coming. It's fine.
All right. Phalanx says, Tim, you keep talking about 3D printed guns, but why not the Lutie? It's also my birthday, so I have some of my money. Oh, thank you. What's the Lutie?
How do you spell it?
L-U-T-Y.
Don't know.
I am unfamiliar.
Not sure.
Everyone's
Nero was playing when Rome was burning. He was playing the Lutie.
I heard that was actually not true, but I'd like to go into that deeper. The Lutie submachine gun?
Oh my.
Everybody is putting F in chat, but hold on. I said that if you want to... smash the like button to end the Fed.
You guys can't take directions.
You gotta listen close.
Get it together.
Well, maybe they're just trying to abolish the Fed.
Oh, I see.
The Fed. Mark H. says, Tom McDonald would be an awesome future guest. You guys rock. He would.
Yeah.
He would.
Tom, you are always welcome to come on the show. You know what I would love to do, too, is do a music collaboration with him, because we have one song that's kind of punk rock. I can't write a verse to. I just don't know.
Oh, Tom would be great.
And so I was like, it's faster. So maybe what it needs is rap so it can convey the story in a meaningful way. So I reached out to him, but he's a busy guy. There's some other people I have in mind. We'll see what we can get done. Got a lot of music stuff in the works.
That's awesome, man.
Yo, it's just everybody is so busy. There's the talent pool is
talented people are busy.
It's all bought up.
It's hard.
Yeah, we're trying to find we're talking to some big industry music people, but they're like, "Yo, everybody is swamped." Where's everybody at? You know.
Speaking of music, I loved your Chicken City theme song.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Really, is that live now? Did that come out?
Well, I played it on
Instagram.
I saw
the making of, and I just thought it was so endearing.
I haven't heard the last one.
It's just four chords. I wrote it in 10 seconds.
That's great though. It puts you in a good mood.
Oh yeah, Chicken City music. Roberto is the sheriff of Chicken City, and Roberto Jr. is his deputy. But Roberto's at the Boys Town now.
Aw.
He's in Freedomistan.
Good for him.
So with his sons. Yeah, so he's aggressive. Roberto Jr. is much nicer to the girls.
Is he a Brahma?
Roberto Jr. is Rhode Island Red and Easter Egger of some sort.
Okay.
Some kind of mix. But he looks just like a Rhode Island Red.
I think I saw him outside. He's beautiful. Yeah, he's beautiful.
So Roberto was getting really aggressive. He jump kicked me one day. Hmm. Yeah, he was getting... And we can't have him banging his daughters.
No.
Yeah, so he already did, and he had a bunch of granddaughter daughters.
Illegitimate
and so we're like,
grandchildren.
That's the limit, you know, for line breeding, I guess.
Yeah, you're not supposed to...
You can do it once, I guess, for certain traits.
Yeah.
So now he's got a few granddaughter daughters. And his and these chickens are their own aunts, I think. Is that what it is?
Oh, sounds right.
You're going to want to change that bloodline.
We did.
Yeah.
Well, so Roberto Jr. is his son, but we have two Brahma roosters now that are Roberto's sons with our Brahma Sarah. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to take all the boys out because we have a Silky who's been yelling.
Love them.
And then the Silky breeds with everybody and makes satins.
It's one nice. Lucky Silky. Yeah.
Silkies are great.
Do roosters generally have a different call? Like what do you call that? A cock-a-doodle-doo? What is that?
Crow.
Oh,
crow.
They do based upon when we would notice when you live with them and you have them on the farm and you know as well, you know what they're saying. When there was a fox nearby, it was a different sound. When it was like run and take cover, he would make some sound. Our Rudus's name was Cletus.
Hmm.
And all the hens would run into the house. Like it was like, what? Heads up, here comes the fox. They all have different sounds. It's very cool.
Adrian Curry in chat says, House Lannister hens. That is correct.
Yeah.
That is what they are.
That's very good.
Oh, man.
That's very good.
All right, let's read some more. DD says, the state is a joke. They do not care about you. Well, of course they don't.
Duh.
Yeah, most of these politicians are like, I just want to say the bare minimum that I have to get reelected. That's about it. There's like 10 politicians who are actually trying stuff. All right, Minion 715 says, Tim, check out New York response with Bill S9407 making the purchase or possession of all types of body armor a felony if it is passed.
Woo. That's no good.
Nuts, man.
Mm. Why?
How do you legally define body armor then? So you know what they were doing in Thailand is they would buy X-ray sheets and they would stagger them inside vests as plates.
Nice. Mm.
And I don't know if that actually worked, but they said it did. You take a whole bunch of the X-ray film, and it creates some kind of, you know, plate.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I have to ask, how do you justify banning a defensive, not even a weapon, a defensive thing? What case do you make that says, oh, you shouldn't be able to actually literally protect your vital organs from a possible attack, which we know are happening, by the way. I don't get it.
Welder1 says, Tim, you need to buy billboards near establishment media that reads, if you want real news, go to timcast.com.
Nice.
Ooh.
We did have some. I don't know if they went up. They might be in Chicago. And it's a quote from Michael Malice that says, what is it? Well, the quote was something like, the corporate press gives you the narrative, timcast.com, or Timcast gives you the news. I think that's on some of the billboards. So I did see that we have the one in Times Square, but that was more of like a statement, like, we're here, get used to it. And we bought a bunch in Chicago because that was actually like the biggest regional demographic for the show is Chicago. So I was like, we'll put them in Chicago because apparently people in Chicago like the show. And we'll see how that works out. We'll see if it works out. But either way, we've done zero marketing until this point. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. And it's all thanks to all of you as members. We're going to keep growing. I think we need to stop. A lot of people, all of these channels, all of these independent creators need to stop looking at the establishment mainstream media as if they are some big monolith and start recognizing that we've beached the shore.
We've
we are storming.
The walls. Yeah,
we've breached the walls.
Go.
We are running across the beaches of Normandy figuratively and, they're firing all of these smears and hit pieces desperate to stop us. But all we got to do is as we get big enough is just start taking over those spaces. So, I don't know, Super Bowl ads or something.
Yeah, and you'll realize when you start doing it too that the amount of cover you run as an independent journalist or an independent creator is so much more than a guy on a beachhead storming against machine guns. One guy doesn't provide a lot of cover for everyone else, but when you're a loud voice in the media, man, is that a distraction for the people that aren't comfortable with it.
What's funny is the hubris of the mainstream folks in their position, like, you know, Anderson Cooper. There are more people watching Bobby Flay make a frittata than are watching him. But if he would tell you he's the most important voice in general, people have 40,000, 50,000 people watching him a night. So it's kind of funny to see that they still think they're these powerful voices, and they're really, we shouldn't give them any props because they're kind of obsolete. Mm.
All right. Junkie Pox says cops are now watered down. The Polk mandate made many good ones leave. The defund programs and protests made the good ones leave. Effective cops also typically have past military training, and there are few remaining. Mm. This was the point I was trying to make on Twitter, which was probably not well framed. But when you create a culture around the defund movement and you demonize cops and you riot, the good cops leave. And then you get there's two kinds of cops. There's the cop who's like, I am doing this job not because of the rewards. I'm doing it because I must be the person to run in to save those lives. Right. And then you get other cops who are like, I don't know, man, I just need a job. And what we have now are the, I don't know, man, I just need a job. Hmm. I'm not going to run in there and get shot. Are you nuts? I'm just here for the paycheck. Because the good cops don't want to be there anymore. That's sad, man. Hmm. All right. Drake Tilson says, I'm an FFL. Many FFLs offer payment plans through their credit card processing companies so they can close sales with people who otherwise don't have the cash or credit to pay for the firearm. Interesting. Hmm. I mean, financing is financing, you know? Flinch Sun says, in reference to your earlier segment, the reason that feds are referred to as glowies is from Terry A. Davis and his less than charitable term he uses for the CIA and how they glow in the dark.
Oh. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yep.
Checks out.
All right. Archmagos, Errant Carbos says, I would charge in to save any child I could from such a fate. I don't think I could stop myself from berserking on in there to stop him or die trying. That's what I'm saying. Mm. I don't know if I would have any logical thought at all. I might just be like,
yeah,
kick the door in.
I
But the CBP guy, exactly that, he grabbed the gun and he went for it. Some people are just like, run in.
Yeah.
Save these kids.
I don't even have kids, and I was imagining how I would feel in that situation, and it was making my blood pressure rise.
Yeah. I can understand if someone was like, you were unarmed, and there was someone with a weapon, and you'd be like, what do I do? But these were cops with guns. That's why I'm saying, like, I'd probably just do it poorly, but freak out. I'd probably freak out. I don't know what to say, man. I mean, maybe it's all well and good. Like, we like to believe we would be better at it than they would. But I got to tell you, man, I've run into danger for stupider reasons.
Hmm.
It leaves me speechless, really.
Hmm. Speechless. Available on Amazon.
That's right. Michael Knowles, thanks Knowles, you. Oh my gosh, ridiculous. It never dies. Genius marketing.
Yep. He's got us. Okay, let's try and grab some more super chats. David C. Kronk Sr. says, I find it very disconcerting that we as a society put our money into a more secure place than we put our children. We deserve what we get. Mm. Well, you know, you get what you deserve. That's used in a bad way in a lot of senses. You get what you deserve, but it's not always a bad thing. It's like, you know the story of the king who said he wanted, who was it, his blacksmith to make him something that would make him happy when he was sad and sad when he was happy. I'm probably ruining the story or whatever. You ever hear this one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's like, I challenge you to produce an item that would make me sad when I'm happy and happy when I'm sad. And so he made a ring or something that engraved in it said, this too shall pass.
That's a great line.
Yeah. So like,
it's from Ecclesiastes.
You know, when you say you get what you deserve, it's a good thing. You work really hard, you'll get what you deserve.
Yeah.
You do bad things, you will get what you deserve. Mm. Raymond G. Stanley Jr. says, Tim, make a short film about him. Praise strength. We could do something. Some people do an animation or something about the, here we go. James Greenshade says they did make a movie about that guy. It's called Die Hard.
Woo! Nice. That's right.
You see, those were the heroes we had, like I had when I was a kid.
Yeah.
The dude who used to tape the gun to his back and he's got his hands up and then yippee-ki-yay.
Crawling through the vents, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Broken glass and he's no shoes on.
So, but at what point though are they the good guys and then they become the Fed? Like, what's the crossover?
There's definitely crossover.
Yeah. And by the way, can we just shut the lights off and you can confirm I'm not glowing?
You're glowing in the dark. Well, we
and then
done
we
that
know
yet.
I'm on the good side of this deal.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You did the right thing.
No, I don't. I mean, I think it's all just about generalities, generalizations. Like, there are bad feds, like the ones who go to the garage pull rope, but the ones who don't go and deal with political corruption. I think for the most part, everybody, I've talked to some active feds who are total MAGA. And what I've told is that it's not as cut and dry as people think. A lot of people think that the entirety of like the FBI is all Trump derangement syndrome. And it's like, no, it's the same as the world. It's the same as the country. Mm. A bunch of them are, especially because they're living in DC. So you see a lot of them. But then there's a bunch of, you know, there's MAGA ones, and then there's like middle of the road guys. And the problem is, as you see in the real world, conservatives and centrists rarely speak up. And so the Trump derangement ones are doing what they want. The other guys are like, I don't know, man. You know, I shouldn't say anything. I could lose my job. I got kids. And that's the reality. Yeah. That's the problem. Bad people do bad things. And if, you know, all that is required for evil to triumph is that good men do nothing.
That's correct.
Good persons do nothing.
Stand in the hallway. That's right.
Also, well done, sir. Good people can do bad things if they're in bad systems.
Yes.
True.
Very, very true. History shows that true.
That's sad, man. All right.
Vice versa. Bad people can do good things in good systems.
Raymond G. Stanley Jr. says, quote, Ian, you are right. Sounds like a Freudian slip.
Ah, so weird.
But you said it.
Very intentional.
Thanks, Raymond.
It was true. Julio Vallalta III says, just saw a Timcast IRL billboard off Interstate by Midway Airport.
Woo!
Also seen in that area. Regular gas at
$5.53
a gallon.
Oh,
so when I was buying the billboards in Chicago, I was like, at least one of them has to be off Interstate 55 at Central Avenue because that's where I grew up. The rest can be in strategic places, but that one's for my friends.
Did you get it?
Yeah. Excellent. Apparently it's up. I didn't know it was going to go up right away.
That's awesome. Great.
Yeah, so years ago, we've done a bunch of different polls, and we also have analytic data, and Chicago is always the biggest. Not by much, but I think it makes sense considering I'm from Chicago, so people there probably have similar opinions. We grew up in the same place. So I was like, all right, well, you know, if we're going to buy ads and actually buy ads, we'll do it in Chicago. It's a big city, and the people there have similar views. It's a big liberal city for sure. But if you don't like Democrats and you're not a conservative in Chicago, you're basically like me, you know.
If you guys see billboards, get a nice high-res shot of it and tweet it at me. Tag me in it, and I'll see if we can circulate it on the show.
Yeah, so good.
Give the address of where it is, the location.
Josh, oh my gosh, says Tim, if the government subsidizes guns using tax money, it may turn out like the universities raising prices to get more money. No thanks. That is a good point. So I was only half joking. I was making a point about how Republicans never actually fight for things the way Democrats do. Democrats are like, we demand you pay for our healthcare, and then healthcare goes crazy. And then I'm like, okay, then we demand you pay for our guns.
Yeah.
How about that? Here's a compromise. I will say yes to universal healthcare if you say yes to universal guns. And it works out, too, because then with all the guns everywhere, you're worried. Don't worry. Hospital's covered for you.
Yeah.
These people don't realize that you don't just get free stuff because you want it. It means we get free stuff, too.
That's fair.
Yeah. I also think it's funny that the student debt forgiveness people are like 13% of the population, and they want all of the poor people to subsidize their degrees.
Do you see that there was a study done by the Fed, the other Fed?
Oh, the Fed.
Yes, the other ones, the bankers. Yeah.
The one we want to end.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
They surveyed student loan folks, and 70% of them could, as of this moment, continue their payments. In other words, 70% of folks who have student loans absolutely need no assistance. Just interesting that this whole conversation around loan forgiveness, not necessarily everybody needs it.
Yeah, but they're all getting $10,000.
Really?
That's the proposal.
Yeah, it's bribing voters.
Yeah,
it's
crazy.
Yeah, 10,000
bonkers.
I mean, that's nuts, man. Okay, all right. Let's see. Second Fleet Actual says, Tim, if they aren't old enough to be armed, they aren't old enough to vote. Force them to choose one or the other.
There you go.
I think they would give them the guns.
Raise the age of everything.
They'd be like, okay, let's get 16-year-olds to vote. There was a bunch of students protested gun violence, and they were like, just because we're students doesn't mean we aren't allowed, you know, we aren't, they were like, we're, you know, just because we're students doesn't mean we're not allowed to protest. And I'm like, no, your lack of experience and knowledge on these issues is why you shouldn't protest. But I don't really mean you shouldn't protest. I'm just saying, like, I don't think you, as a gun control person, regardless of age, has done any research on this.
No.
That's it. I don't care how old you are. You can be 14, and if you're like, I have not Googled this, but I'm going to protest, I'll be like, maybe you should.
Yeah, and unless I'm a 16-year-old set policy, it was that Swedish chick, and they basically led Europe into war.
I love
it. Right? So let's not have 16-year-olds make any more policy decisions.
Great option.
I would like to translate for Greta Thunberg when she was like, we don't want to wait till 2030 or 2022. She was actually saying, I want to kill 60 million people today.
Sounds familiar.
And you think I'm joking, but she said she wanted to shut down all fossil fuels today. Mm-hmm. I'm like, right. Yeah, overnight, 60 million people around the world die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They've also figured out how to upscale coal into graphene. I don't know if you've been following that at all, but they hit it with lasers, and they can turn it into much cleaner burn fuel.
Oh, you see, now Greta Thunberg's trying to take away Ian's graphene. Greta, she's
on your side.
And your buddy in Chicago should know that if 550 is bad, wait till August.
Oh,
it's going to get much, much worse.
Are you making your own fuel?
Wait till the harvest. Wait till the harvest.
I'm trying to...
No fertilizer.
I know.
This fall harvest is going to be a shock to the system.
We're still eating last year's crops, most of the wheat. Some winter wheat was harvested recently, but very little. We're still eating last year's wheat.
We're actually growing wheat as well.
You have to.
Yeah, there were weeds.
Volunteer
and we
wheat.
We ignored them for a long enough time, and then we realized it was wheat. And
Look at us.
Leave it, I guess. I was like, I guess we'll make bread. Huh? Yeah, we got a whole bunch growing. And I was like, what is this strange plant growing? Oh.
Now, how are you going to harvest it, by the way? Do you have the side? What do you got to cut it off?
Got a side.
Oh, my meteorite katana.
Yeah, there you go.
Some swords up on the walls.
Oh, good luck.
No, I won't use that. I'll use one of my other katanas.
Dude, let's get a grindstone.
To sharpen them?
Yeah. No, to grind the wheat once we get it out.
Oh,
yeah. Sharpen them.
No. We're going to get a donkey.
Yeah.
The donkey walks in the circle.
And a millstone? Yeah. Absolutely. That would be great. Old school.
Oh, it's a millstone. The grindstone is for the blade.
I feel like that could be another YouTube channel for you. Just the donkey going around in circles.
Oh, yeah.
It would be super, cathartic.
Drop a carrot every 500 bucks and super
chance. I would watch that.
Great, to fall asleep and just watch
the donkey go in circles.
We have 360 camera.
Right.
Now we're talking.
We have the chicken parties at chickencitylive.com. So you can give $5 and then treats come down. And then once $100 hits, a chicken party happens. And so when we were launching Pop Culture Crisis Live, I said, we need to do the same thing. You know, like we need to have it so that when people super chat, something happens. And then once you reach a number, something happens. So now, during Pop Culture Crisis, the host, will be talking, and if you super chat, a money gun shoots 20s into the air.
So good.
And then once $100 is reached, a crisis party happens where police lights go off, and then money starts flying at people, one flew into Ian's coffee.
Yeah, it's a bit distracting.
It is a little
distracting. Hit me in the face, one fell in the coffee.
But it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah.
All awesome, right, let's see. Actually. Odysseus Horse says, Tim, if you're serious about the absolute nature of 2A, you should get Brandon Herrera, the AK guy, on to tell you about the ATF form to register your nuclear device. I'd love to hear it.
I have tried so many times to get that man. He is busy as all get out. Someday, hopefully.
Brandon Herrera is his name?
Yeah, Brandon Herrera.
Matthew Fettig says, hey, Tim, love all your work. Anyway, the IRL can do a poll of the day and then talk about it a little on the show to help the show feel even more engaging. That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We could do something in the community section on the page, like maybe in the morning. Well, or maybe just before, maybe a couple hours before the show in the news, instead of like, you know, here like some big stories and we'll see what people are interested in you know, we'll ask a question, then we can pull it up on the show. That would be fun, actually. It's a good idea. Matthew, you get no royalties. It's ours. You gave us the idea.
Thank
we own
you.
It now.
Nice job, dude.
Yeah. You forfeit all rights. No, we'll see. We'll see.
What about my donkey idea? Can I get in on that?
You
guys do that? I'll cut.
I'll give you back the $100.
That proves you're not a is that what I want?
Got it. Yeah.
So like to earn redemption, you gave me $100, I'll give it back.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Good donkey idea. Matt Reese says, the left are saying mental health isn't an issue, while you see a clear trend to normalize mental illness, as if madness should be the new baseline. Yeah, well, unfortunately.
And this is the hill I'm on right now, is the pharmaceutical industry is the root problem of this, because just too much of a coincidence not to be.
Fritter says, disabled guy here. I walk with a cane. Love it when my friends yell, hurry up. Dude, I only have 2 speeds. If you don't like this one, you sure as hell won't like the other.
I love that guy.
That's great.
Food for Life Global says, our charity is FFL.org, and our mission is to unite the world through the sharing of pure food.
Hmm.
We serve over 1 million vegan meals a day. Oh, that's cool.
Very cool.
FFL, too. I thought it was going to be a gun thing.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's Food for Life. Wait, that's 3 Fs. That's FFFL. Wait. That's FFG.
Food for
effing life.
Oh, I'm an idiot.
Oh, Tim can't count.
I can't count.
Where's
no.
that H?
Food for Life.
WWJD.
Food?
FFLG. That's what it was. I pulled another Biden, man.
What's going on?
I gotta
here,
get sleep.
Man.
Yeah, you gotta take a meditation break. You're gonna love the fresh air.
Yep. If I pull more Bidens like this, I don't know if I keep doing the show.
Forest bathing.
But I do like the fact that whenever I screw up, I can say I pulled a Biden.
Yeah, I like that. Because
it makes it funny.
And then you have to whisper something really creepy.
And like, angry.
I'm your commander in chief. That was so creepy today. It gave me like a goosebumps. Like, ooh.
Oh, he did that.
We'll grab two more here. Let's see. Phalanx says the Ludi is a 9mm SMG that is built entirely from things you find at the hardware store. British anti-gun control guy Phil Ludi wrote a book showing how to do it.
Ooh.
Wow. You can't ban the knowledge. That's crazy.
Nice. Mm. You cannot, no.
Nasho Nabo says, shout out to Riley Highland. The chicken cams will be forever known as Timcest.
Whoa.
Is that because Roberto and his daughters?
Probably. That makes sense.
So. Well, hey,
that's
man.
Fair.
Don't put your name with that. You didn't do anything wrong. That's
I didn't do anything.
Nature.
It he did. And you know what was funny is we put Dorothy in sex jail.
Aww.
Because he was going at her too much and hurt her back.
Yeah, she was the victim.
She was the favorite.
She was the punished.
She was the favorite. And so we had to separate her, and people got mad. They were like, why shouldn't you put Roberto in there? And that's like, well, but he's the rooster. And he, like, you
patriarchy.
Know, keeps the girls in check and, like, guards them. And if we separate him, he might come back out and fight with his son, so we can't. But then eventually we decided it's time to send Roberto off to the mine over at Freedomistan with the boys. And so we put him in sex jail.
I'm sure she appreciated a little break also.
She did. She's not healing.
Poor lady.
Oh, she's not?
No.
Oh.
It's been a couple months, and she's not growing the feathers back.
Oh. She needs some Reiki.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and for some reason, she is the favorite even for Roberto Jr. now. It's crazy. That she,
chicken hormones.
I don't know anything about chicken attractiveness, but she must be a supermodel in chicken
lady.
World.
The Bard Rock?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's hot.
You know, it's really funny. We have two Bard Rock. They look like zebras. They have, like, you know, white and black. And Vanessa has always got a furled brow. And that's how you tell them apart. You see Vanessa, and she's always looking angry at you like this with
she's
her eyes
crappy.
Down. And Dorothy's eyes are always up like, oh.
She's very cute.
So you instantly just know who's who. Mm. Yeah.
They're very friendly. They're both real friendly to humans, too. That might have something to do with them being the favorites of the roosters.
Adrian Curry says, eat Roberto. He will always be a part of you.
Oh, that's terrible.
Wow. Justice Yikes. Has been served.
I don't think we'll eat any of the original cast, which includes Roberto. But all the rest of them, they don't have names, are fair game.
Yeah,
and we can't name the 50 of them that we have. So we named one of the Brahmas, the son of Sarah, Isaac, because in the Bible, Sarah's son is Isaac. So he's safe. And Sarah is safe. And then she has another son and daughter. I guess they'll be safe.
I like the Bible trend. That's cool.
Well, I don't know. It's just an idea someone came up with, I guess. So, you know, we'll see how Chicken City goes. But also, guys, check out Pop Culture Crisis on YouTube live Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. We're going to be doing some ads for them as well as the show starts kicking up and getting to full speed. And it's going really good. I mean, Lydia and Ian have been on the show.
So fun.
This week, actually. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
So smash the like button if you haven't already. Subscribe to the channel. Share the show is the most powerful thing you can do. You know, we started doing this marketing thing recently. But everything for this show has been organic growth, which is just totally nuts. And I talked to some marketing people who couldn't believe it. They were like, no way. And just people were sharing it. I guess they like it.
Yeah.
So that really is the most powerful thing. But now we'll do traditional marketing and we're going to take over. That's what we're going to do. You can follow the show at TimCastIRL. You can follow me personally at TimCast. Brian, you want to shout anything out?
I'm just so pleased to be here. Can't wait to come back if you have me, even though if I glow. But please, the President's Daily Brief. Love it if you all listen to that. And I'm on Twitter, Brian Dean Wright.
Always great to be here, Daniel Turner. Daniel Turner, Power of the Future, powerofthefuture.com. And also always a shout out to Bristol Farm Virginia on Instagram, our fantastic sheep farm.
I sent you
a picture of the sheep, but I don't know if you can pull it up in time.
I can't pull it up in time, but I am going to put that link in our bio.
Awesome.
So your socials will have
my
that
sheep
in.
Are just
they're adorable.
They're the most beautiful sheep in the world. Swiss Valet, they're just beautiful.
Did you shave them yet?
The Scottish blackface will get sheared next week.
Are you going to record it?
They're getting really hot. You guys want to come record it? You can. It's kind of funny.
That'd be fun.
I like the idea.
They'll be so happy because they're hot right now.
Oh, sure.
They're so hot. They have so much wool. But Bristol Farm Virginia on Instagram, and great to be here. Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
I used to think it was unethical to shave sheep just because the way they scream and struggle, but I saw a sheep with so much wool it couldn't move.
Yeah.
So you kind of got them.
No,
you see how they vaccinate the baby sheep? They have them sitting in that conveyor belt thing with their feet up.
Aww.
And it just like pulls them forward and they don't move and they just gives them the shot and then it drops them and they walk away.
I love them.
It's great. I love
it. Daniel, always great. Really great to see you, man. Brian, really good to see you, dude. And we did joke about the whole CIA that you work for the Fed and everything, but that's Fed. Like, thank you so much for doing that and
like the
work
voice.
You've done.
You bet.
And for coming and talking about it.
Anytime.
Can't wait to see you again, man. This is great stuff. I followed you on Twitter. Lydia, I love you. Tim, always a pleasure, my man.
All right. I wanted to leave you guys with this quick thought. I was just talking to Chris Carr, who's one of our editors over at timcast.com, and I said, Chris, I would really like to know how many of the cops who just stood in the hallway while those kids were dying had their own kids. I was like, I'm willing to bet that not a lot of them have their own children. And I was like, this is how a culture dies, when we're not willing to defend the people who need our defense the most, because our family line ends with us, and if we're to die, that's it. So anyway, that's not exactly a bright note to leave you with, but I also want to say you guys can follow me on Twitter and minds.com at sourpatchlets, as well as sourpatchlets.me.
Thanks for hanging out, everybody. Check out Pop Culture Crisis on YouTube and subscribe to it. And check out chickencitylive.com. We have the Cast Castle vlog up every day, and we'll be back with the show. We are working on Memorial Day. It's going to be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Thanks for hanging out, and we'll see you all then.
Bye, guys.